Freaks and Shrieks, Mostly Ghostly, Number 7, by R. L. Stine, Cap S, T-I-N-E. Published by Delacorte Press, an imprint of Random House Children's Books, a division of Random House Incorporated, New York. Visit us on the web, www.randomhouse.com/KIDS. Educators and librarians, for a variety of teaching tools, visit us at www.randomhouse.com/TEACHERS. Copyright 2005 by Parachute Publishing, LLC. ISBN 0-385-74694-6. All rights reserved. No part of this book may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, electronic or mechanical, including photocopying, recording, or by any information storage and retrieval system, without the written permission of the publisher. Narrated by Derek Sparks. Recorded by volunteers in the CNIB Library for the Blind, Toronto, exclusively for the use of persons with a perceptual disability, as defined in the Canadian Copyright Act, that prevents or inhibits them from reading a literary, musical, dramatic, or artistic work in its original format. This book is protected by copyright and may not be duplicated. From the back cover. Wimp or Chimp? Max made a deal with Nikki and Tara, the two ghosts who live in his bedroom. If he helps them figure out how they got turned into ghosts, they'll help him prove to his dad that he isn't a worthless wimp. Well, Max is about to make good on his end of the bargain. Someone saw what happened to the kids. Someone may know the secret that will bring them back to life. The problem is that the someone isn't a someone. The someone is a chimpanzee, and Max is going to switch brains with him to learn the secret. Also available in Gibraltar Library binding. www.randomhouse.com/KIDS. www.mostlygghostly.net. Experience all the chills of the Mostly Ghostly series. Mostly Ghostly Number 1, Who Let the Ghosts Out? Mostly Ghostly Number 2, Have You Met My Ghoul Friend? Mostly Ghostly Number 3, One Night in Doom House. Mostly Ghostly Number 4, Little Camp of Horrors. Mostly Ghostly Number 5, Ghouls Gone Wild. Mostly Ghostly Number 6, Let's Get This Party Haunted. Mostly Ghostly Number 7, Freaks and Shrieks. And coming soon, Mostly Ghostly Number 8, Don't Close Your Eyes. Chapter 1. My sister Tara and I were arguing, for a change. You didn't have to throw the fish up in the air, I said. You got Max into a lot of trouble. It was a joke, Nikki, Tara said. It was supposed to be funny. Max didn't think it was funny, I said. And what about the rest of the class? When the fish cracked in half, those poor kids started screaming their heads off. That's what made it funny, Tara replied. She jammed her floppy red hat down over her dark hair. It was a sunny, warm afternoon. Tara and I were walking home from Max's school. Tara and I don't have a school of our own to go to. That's because we're dead. We're ghosts. Max Doyle is the only person we know who can see and hear us. Sometimes being a ghost is lonely and boring. So Tara and I follow Max to school and try to help him out. Today we didn't help him out much. Today was pet day in Ms. McDonald's sixth grade class. But Max didn't want to bring his big furry wolfhound Buster to school. That's because Buster hates Max. Buster starts to growl and snap whenever Max comes near. When he sees Max, he only thinks, meat. Max gets a little tired of having his dog chew on him all the time. So Max didn't bring Buster for pet day. Instead, he did a very funny thing. He brought a big fish to school. A dead one, It was the stuffed bass that his dad had mounted on the den wall. Max pulled the fish off the wall and carried it to class. When it was his turn, he carried it to the front of the room. He told everyone it was his pet fish, Ernie. That's when Tara decided to help Max out. I tried to stop her, but my sister is stubborn. Once Tara makes up her mind to do something, forget it. That's why I call her Hurricane Tara. She floated up to the front of the room and took the fish from Max's hands. "Maxie, let me hold it up while you describe it," she said. "No, give it back," Max cried. He made a grab for the fish and missed. A lot of kids in the class were kind of shocked. They couldn't see Tara. They could only see the fish jumping out of Max's hands. Max seemed to be standing there arguing with himself. "Give it back," Max shouted again. He grabbed the tail and tugged. Tara tugged back. "I'm only trying to make your talk more interesting," she said. It became a real tug of war. Ms. McDonald's mouth dropped open. "Max, what are you doing?" "Trying to reel them in," Max said. "He's, trying to swim upstream." Some kids were laughing hard now. Tara should have stopped, but my little sister doesn't know the words give up. "Nikki, catch," she shouted, and she tossed the big fish high in the air, over the kids' heads to me at the back of the room. "It's okay, everyone," Max shouted. "It's a flying fish." Tara threw it too hard. It bounced off the chalkboard, sailed back, and hit a girl in the head. She started to scream. The bass hit the floor hard and broke in half. Hundreds of cockroaches poured out from inside it, scampering over the floor. And then everyone was screaming, screaming, stamping their feet, leaping onto their chairs. It was way funny, but no one was laughing. Max was in major trouble. Tara and I decided it was time to leave. So now we were walking past sparkling green front yards on our way back to Max's house. Our old house, when we were alive. "Max didn't look too happy," I said. Tara sighed. "I was only trying to make Pet Day more fun. It's hard to have fun when you're a ghost." Two squirrels came chasing each other across the grass. They ran right between Tara and me. One of them brushed my leg. They had no idea we were there. "Yeah, I hate being invisible," I said. "I'm tired of being a ghost. I wish Mom and Dad would hurry back." "Our parents are ghosts, too. We don't know why. We don't know what happened to our family. Mom and Dad were scientists. They had a lab where they found a way to capture evil ghosts. One day the ghosts escaped, and the four of us were no longer alive. That's all we know. Mom and Dad went off to find answers. They think they can find a way to bring our family back to life. They told us to wait for them in our old house with Max and his family. But they've been gone a long time. Tara and I really miss them. We've been feeling very sad lately." We turned onto Bleak Street, our street. I heard shouts from the next yard. A boy was screaming. Tara and I hurried across the street. We saw the Wilbur brothers, Billy and Willie, the worst kids at Jefferson Elementary. They were teasing a little red-haired boy. He looked to be only 5 or 6. Billy Wilbur grabbed the boy's baseball cap and tossed it to his brother, Willie. They were playing keep-away with the little guy's cap. They held it right in front of his face, then jerked it out of his reach. The little boy started to cry. That made the Wilbur brothers toss back their heads and hee-haw with laughter. "Come on, Nikki," Tara tugged my arm. "Let's go have a little fun with those Wilbur brats." Chapter 2. Billy Wilbur had the little boy's cap. He squatted down at the edge of a flower garden and started scooping with one hand, filling the cap with mud. "Give me my cap," the little boy pleaded. Tears ran down his red cheeks. "It's my new cap."
"It's our new cap now," Willie said.
Billy stood up and whirled around. He raised the cap brimming with mud.
"You want it back, Casey?" he said, grinning. "Okay, I'll give it back."
"Put it back on Casey's head," Willie said, grinning at his brother. Tara swooped up behind them. She grabbed the cap and popped it down on Billy Wilbur's head.
The wet mud oozed down his face. Casey's mouth dropped open in surprise. Billy turned angrily to his brother. "Hey, punk, what'd you do that for?" He pulled the cap off and tossed it at Willie. He wiped mud off his face with one hand and smeared it down the front of his brother's shirt. "Hey!" Willie jumped back. "I didn't do anything." I grabbed him by the shoulders and made him spin around a few times. Tara had a hold of Billy. We pushed them forward and made them crack heads. They both cried out angrily. Casey laughed.
"What's your problem?" Billy Wilbur shouted angrily. "What's your problem?" Willie screamed.
They both turned on little Casey.
"What are you laughing about, punk?" Willie snarled. "It's time for your mud bath, isn't it?"
Casey stumbled back.
"Yeah," Billy agreed. "Mud bath time."
"No, please," Casey screamed.
They both dove at him, but Tara and I grabbed the two Wilbers by their ankles.
"Whoa! Hey!"
We pulled them up till they were standing on their heads. Casey stared at them in shock.
"How do you do that?" he asked.
"I don't know," Billy Wilbur said. "I can't get down," his brother groaned. "Casey, help us down."
Casey stood there frozen, gaping at them. Then he grabbed his muddy cap and took off running down the block. As soon as he was gone, Tara and I let go of the Wilbers. They flopped onto their stomachs, confused. Then they both jumped up fast. They gazed all around. They scratched their heads.
"Weird," Willie Wilbur muttered.
"Totally," his brother said. They took off running in the other direction. Tara and I laughed.
"That was kind of fun," I said.
"Too easy," Tara replied.
"Hey, Nicky, maybe that's what we could be doing for laughs. Turn everyone upside down. Terrorize the neighborhood."
I nodded.
"Well, we're already terrorizing Max."
"He'll like what we did to the Wilbers," Tara said, straightening her cap, "if he ever speaks to us again." We crossed the street. Our house was two blocks away. A girl raced past on a bike, pedaling furiously. She almost knocked us over. She had no idea we were there. I heard footsteps on the sidewalk behind us. I spun around and saw a short man, cropped white beard, wearing a black raincoat. He slid behind a fat tree trunk.
"Weird," I muttered.
Tara and I walked another half block. Again I heard the scrape of shoes on the walk behind us. We both turned around. I saw a flash of black, the man's raincoat disappearing as he ducked behind a hedge. I stared hard at the hedge. I could see the man ducking low, peering back at us. A chill ran down my back. I turned to my sister.
"Tara," I whispered, "guess what? We're being followed."
Chapter 3 Tara turned and squinted into the hedge.
"Let's go see what he wants," she said.
She tugged her hat down and started walking toward the man, swinging her arms at her sides.
Typical.
I ran after her and grabbed her by the shoulder.
"Hello, are you crazy? Don't you see him hiding there?"
She pulled herself free.
"So?"
"So he doesn't want us to see him," I said, glancing back at him. I could see the black raincoat through the leafy hedge.
"That means he's dangerous," I said. "How many dangerous ghosts have come after us this year?"
"A lot," Tara replied. "What makes you think he's a ghost?"
I let out a sigh. "I don't know what he is. I only know he's trying hard not to be seen."
"Then if you're so smart, what should we do?" Tara asked. I thought about it for a moment.
"Run?"
"Okay, run," Tara said. We took off running side by side across the grass. Two squirrels turned their heads as we zoomed past. I knew they couldn't see us, but they must have felt the burst of wind. Some kid had left a tricycle in his driveway, and I ran right through it. Tara's long plastic earrings jangled and flew behind her as she picked up speed. We reached the end of the block. I glanced back. The man was still following. His black raincoat flapped in the wind. He dove around the side of a house when he saw me turn.
"Almost home," I said. "We'll be safe."
I started across the street, but Tara tugged me to a stop.
"No, not home," she said, breathing hard. "We can't go home, Nicky. We don't want him to know where we live."
The man peeked out at us from behind the house, then quickly pulled his head back.
"Okay, let's go."
I turned at the corner and led us away from our house. We ran into a backyard with a small plastic swimming pool and pool toys scattered everywhere. We ran to the side of the garage and stopped.
"Is he still there?"
Tara asked. I peeked out. "Yes, still there."
"Let's go into this house," Tara said.
She had her hands on her knees and was struggling to catch her breath.
"Maybe it will throw him off the track. He'll think it's our house."
"Maybe," I said, "or maybe he'll come in after us." Tara didn't wait to discuss it. She disappeared through the brick wall of the house, and I followed her inside. We found ourselves in a brightly lit yellow and white kitchen. Two little boys sat at a small kitchen table. One of them was playing with a Game Boy. The other was coloring with markers. They didn't look up when Tara and I burst inside. Tara stepped right up to their table.
"Hey, guys, can you hear us?" she called.
"No." Tara and I tiptoed to the kitchen window. My heart was pounding. We never sneak into other people's houses. It just doesn't seem right. But this was definitely an emergency. We both leaned on the edge of the kitchen sink and peered out the window.
"Oh, wow!" Tara cried. "Look at him, he's still out there!"
The little man looked angry. Above his short, white beard, his face was bright red. He stood beside the kiddie pool, his eyes narrowed into slits. He had his hands shoved into the pockets of the raincoat. He stared at the house, but he didn't make a move to come inside.
"Who is he?" Tara whispered. "Why is he following us?"
I sighed.
"It can't be good news."
"Level 3," the kid with the Game Boy shouted from behind us at the table. "I made it to level 3!"
I watched the little man start to pace back and forth. I could see he was thinking hard. He nearly fell into the swimming pool. He took a few steps toward the back door. My heart skipped a beat. Tara grabbed my arm.
"Nicky, is he coming in?"
"No." He seemed to change his mind. He spun around and walked off. I stretched up as far as I could, watching him stride away. I let out a long breath of air and stepped back from the window.
I think he's gone," I said.
"But let's wait a few minutes to make sure." I saw a plate of Girl Scout cookies on the counter. Thin Mints, my favorite.
"Don't even think about it," Tara said. She shivered. "We have to get home. I hate being followed. I didn't like that little man."
I couldn't resist. I lifted one cookie off the plate.
"Wouldn't you know it, that's when both little boys turned around. They saw the cookie floating in midair, and they both started to laugh. They thought it was funny. I popped the cookie into my mouth.
"Mommy, the cookies are alive!" one of the kids shouted. "The cookies fly!"
"Way to go, dude," Tara said. "Come on, we're out of here." She pulled me through the kitchen wall. Outside, we pressed ourselves against the brick wall. Staying in the shadow of the house, we gazed around. No sign of the little man.
"Let's move,"
Tara whispered. We took off, running hard. I was gasping for breath by the time we reached our house. Tara and I burst right through the front door without bothering to open it. We didn't stop to see if anyone was home. We bolted up the front stairs to Max's room.
"Max, are you home?" I shouted. "Max!"
And there stood someone in black, waiting for us. Chapter 4. Panting hard, I staggered back against the wall. Was it the little man? No. Not the guy with the white beard. It was Max's big brother, Colin. Colin, dressed in black sweats, snooping around Max's room. He pulled open Max's desk drawers and pawed through the stuff inside. What was he looking for? Probably just snooping. Colin's not the best big brother in the world. Actually, he might be the worst. Colin is big and handsome and blonde and strong and athletic. He works out all the time. And he uses chubby little Max as a crash test dummy.
"Ooh, what's that smell?"
Tara whispered. She pinched her fingers over her nose. "Why are you whispering?" I asked. "Colin can't hear us." And then I smelled it, too. Something sour. A really sour smell. Like two-day-old puke. Colin carried a little white paper bag over to Max's bed. He checked the door to make sure no one was coming. Then he reached inside the bag and pulled out an egg.
Whoa!
The disgusting odor swept over us. It was coming from the egg. Colin had a cold grin on his face. He held the egg way out in front of him. Holding my nose, I moved closer. The egg was hard-boiled and covered in mold. Furry green and blue stuff had grown all over it. Totally gross. And what did Colin plan to do with the rotten egg? Put it under Max's pillow, of course.
Let's stop him, Tara whispered. She was fading in and out of view. I could barely see her.
I can't, I said. I'm feeling very weak.
That's one problem with being a ghost. If you use your energy up, you disappear for a while. Sometimes a short while, sometimes a long while. You can't control it.
It's like you're asleep, only you don't know where you are, and you never dream.
I felt myself dissolving, fading away. I saw Colin slide the rotten egg under Max's pillow. I watched him hurry out of the room.
Later, Tara, I whispered, I'm fading fast.
Me too, she whispered.
And then before we disappeared, she quickly added,
Know what's so totally scary about that guy who chased us? He could see us.
Chapter 5. Yo, Aaron, it's Max. What's up? I pressed the cell phone to my ear and gazed around my room. Something smelled bad. I wondered if Nikki and Tara were up to more evil tricks. They totally messed me up in school today. And they broke my dad's precious wall bass in half. How would I ever explain it to him? I never told Dad I was taking it. My plan had been to borrow it, then get it back up on the den wall before he came home from work. Well, forget about that. I was in deep doo-doo. And now my two ghost friends were hiding somewhere, afraid to face me. And I didn't blame them. But what was that yucko smell?
Aaron, where were you? I asked. It's almost dinner time. You were supposed to come here this afternoon, remember? We were going to print out this month's newsletter for our Stargate SG-1 club.
On the other end of the line, I heard Aaron shout something to his mother. Then he came back on.
I got grounded, Max, he said.
Oh, wow, I muttered. Not again.
Aaron is my best buddy in the whole world, but I don't see him too often.
That's because he spends almost his entire life grounded.
This time it's pretty bad, he said, and it's all because of a science experiment.
Excuse me? I said, dude, what kind of science experiment?
I was testing the strength of different glues. You know, every glue has a different stickiness to it. I wanted to see what kind of glue was the stickiest.
I waited to hear the rest.
Go on, Aaron, I said finally.
Well, to make a long story short, I glued my sister's sneakers to the floor.
Caitlin's sneakers? I cried. Was she in them when you glued them?
No, she wasn't home, Aaron said. Hey, I'm not stupid, dude. I wouldn't glue her sneakers to the floor if she was in them.
And how did you pull them up off the floor? I asked.
Couldn't, Aaron replied. That's why I'm so doomed. I used the strongest glue. Those sneakers will never come up.
Oh, wow, I muttered again.
And one more bad thing, Aaron said.
What's that? I asked.
They're glued down right in the middle of the living room.
I let out another groan. I felt sorry for Aaron. He was a really good guy. He just could never resist doing science experiments on stuff that belonged to his little sister. And he always got caught.
So you're grounded for life again? I asked.
My parents are really angry. They say I'm not fit to live in the house, Aaron said. I have to live in a tent in the backyard. I'm only allowed inside for meals.
That's harsh, I said. What if you have to go to the bathroom?
Uh-oh, he said. I didn't think about that.
I guess the Stargate newsletter will have to wait, I said.
Well, Max, since you and I are the only members of the club, it can probably wait.
I have major news to tell you, I said.
Major news?
I mean, this may be the biggest, most totally exciting news of my life, I said.
More exciting than when you met that girl who knows Hillary Duff's cousin?
Aaron,
This news is so totally unbelievable. I stopped because I heard a scream. Aaron's scream on the other end of the phone. A shrill, ear-splitting screech of horror. "Aaron, what's wrong?" I cried. "What happened? What's wrong?" Chapter 6. "My hair! My hair!" he wailed. I gasped. I nearly dropped the phone. "Aaron, what's wrong? No air? You can't breathe?" "No," he cried. I said, "my ear! My ear! It's totally stuck." "Huh?" "I don't understand," I replied. "What about your ear?"
"Caitlin did it," Aaron shouted. "Ouch! She did it. She got her revenge. My ear! She put glue on my cell phone. It's stuck to my ear."
"Take it easy," I said. "Take a deep breath, then very gently try to slide it off."
"It's stuck on," Aaron said. "She really did it to me this time. It's stuck on for life."
"Let me tell you my big news," I started, trying to take his mind off his cell phone problem.
"Your big news," he cried. "How about my big news? I'm going to have a phone hanging from my ear for the rest of my life."
I heard Mom calling me down to dinner.
"I've got to go," I said.
Aaron was screaming so loudly, I don't think he heard me.
"Call you later," I said. "Great. I'll be here. Right by the phone," he screamed.
I clicked my cell phone off, slipped it into my jeans pocket, and hurried down to the kitchen. Mom, Dad, and Colin were already sitting at the table. "I didn't have time to cook," Mom said, "so we're having submarine sandwiches."
"Awesome," I said.
As I started to take my seat next to Colin, he picked up my plate and slid it onto my chair. I couldn't stop myself. I sat on my sandwich. Colin hee-hawed.
"Gotcha again, little bro."
Dad laughed, too. He thinks Colin is a riot.
"Hey, Max," he boomed, "which end do you eat with?"
He and Colin yucked it up, laughing and pounding the table with their fists. "That's not funny," Mom said. Even though Colin and Dad gang up on me, Mom usually takes my side. "You shouldn't ruin good food, even for a joke."
"It isn't ruined," I said. I put my plate on the table. "It's just a little flat."
Colin reached into my sandwich and pulled out some lettuce. He stuffed the lettuce up my nose. "That's not funny at all," Mom said.
"Yes, it is," Colin replied. "It looks like snot."
He and Dad hee-hawed some more. I didn't care. I was too excited about my big news. "I have the most amazing news," I said.
"Max, don't talk with the lettuce leaf in your nose," Mom said.
"Oh, sorry." I pulled out the lettuce. "Listen to my news. Ballantine is coming to town." All three of them stared at me.
"Who?"
Mom and Dad asked at the same time.
"Ballantine," I repeated. "You know, Ballantine, the nearly amazing."
"He's a magician?" Mom asked.
"Only one of the most famous magicians in the world," I exclaimed. "He's coming to our town. He's holding open auditions for young magicians."
Colin giggled.
"Maybe he'll wave his wand and make you disappear."
"It's an awesome opportunity," I said, ignoring my brother. "Ballantine is taking on three students. He's going to teach them and help them with their magic. And if he chooses me..." I stopped talking. I saw something float toward the dinner table. An egg. Nikki or Tara must be carrying it, I realized. It smelled sour and pukey. It must have been the egg that smelled so bad in my room, I realized. A rotten egg. I watched as it floated toward Colin.
"That is very exciting," Mom said. "You'd better practice hard, Max."
The rotten egg lowered itself toward Colin's plate.
"If Ballantine likes me, I could be the next big magic star," I said. "I could be on TV and everything."
"We all could come watch you perform," Mom said. I watched the egg slide into Colin's submarine sandwich. Colin didn't see it. He slapped me on the back so hard that my eyeballs practically flew out of my head.
"Hey, Maxie, what stinks in here?"
He sniffed me.
"You need to take a shower," he said.
He lifted the sub with both hands.
"I can do magic, too. Watch this sandwich disappear before your eyes."
Then he shoved it into his mouth and began chomping away. The sandwich was almost gone when he suddenly stopped his loud, furious chewing and swallowing. A sick look of horror spread over his face. He turned green.
Really?
Pale green.
"I'm going to hurl
he murmured. Holding both hands over his mouth, he jumped up and tore out of the room. I wanted to laugh, but I turned and saw Dad glaring at me angrily.
"Max," he boomed, "see what you did? Why did you make your brother eat so fast? You made him sick."
Chapter 7 "Max, where are you going?" I had just stepped out the front door and started down the driveway when I heard Tara call me. It was a damp, warmish Saturday morning. Gray clouds rolled low overhead. Gusts of wind sent the flowers in our little garden bending one way, then the other.
"Hey, Max, wait up," Nicky called.
"Not now, I'm in a hurry," I said. I still hadn't forgiven them for the bass incident on pet day. Nicky and Tara appeared at my sides. Tara grabbed my arm.
"Maxie, we haven't had any time to hang out. Are we still friends?"
"I don't have time to hang out right now," I said. "I have to get to the magic store in town. I'm going to audition for Ballantine the Nearly Amazing. I'm going to show him my best card tricks." I felt the deck of trick cards in my jeans pocket. I was so nervous I had almost forgotten them.
"Wow," Nicky shook his head. "Dude, that's big. That's way big."
"Bye," I said. I moved away from them and started to hurry down the street. Mom couldn't drive me, so I had to take the Miller Street bus into town.
"Don't be tense," Tara said, floating after me. They both hovered 2 or 3 inches above the ground. "What happens if you pass the test today?"
"Today is like a pretest," I said. "Today I only get to do one trick. If he likes it, I get to do a real performance for him later."
"You are so there," Nicky said. "He'll like you."
"Yes, you're going to totally impress him," Tara said, taking my arm again.
"Know why?"
I squinted at her.
"Why?"
"Because we're going to help you," Tara replied.
"Oh, no!" I screamed, spinning around to face them. "No way!"
"Maxie, calm down," Tara said. I started to jog. "You're going to make me miss the bus."
"You know we can help you," Nicky insisted, floating after me.
He was at least a foot off the ground now. I suddenly wished I could fly, too. I'd fly away from them.
"Max, we'll make things float for you," Tara said. "We'll make things fly up in the air."
"Yeah," Nicky agreed. "When we finish doing our tricks, Ballantine's head will be spinning."
"Ooh, that's a good trick," Tara exclaimed.
"Maybe we could make Ballantine's head spin around a few times. That would impress him."
"I don't want his head to spin," I said through gritted teeth. I stopped jogging and turned to face them. "I have to do this on my own," I said. "You understand that, don't you? You're my friends. I know you only want to help, but you always manage to mess things up and..."
I realized they weren't listening to me. They were staring over my shoulder. They both suddenly looked very frightened.
"What's wrong?" I asked.
"There he is again," Nicky whispered.
"Who?"
I asked. I spun around. I didn't see anyone.
"He's following us," Tara said. "You can't see him. He ducked behind that mailbox."
I blinked.
"Someone is following you? Someone else can see you?"
They both nodded. "On the count of three," Tara said, "we run. Ready?" I stared at the mailbox. I saw someone peek out from behind it. A man with a white beard, dressed in black.
"One, two, three,"
Tara whispered in one breath. We took off, all three of us running full speed down the sidewalk. We jumped over a kid's bike lying across the walk, kept running, and crossed onto Miller. Squinting into the gray light, I could see the bus several blocks down. I started to point to it, then stopped when I saw the man in the black raincoat leap up behind us.
"No!"
I screamed. But he grabbed Nicky and Tara, one in each hand.
"Gotcha," he growled.
Chapter 8
"Let go of them," I shouted.
I wanted to rush the guy. Maybe tackle him so he'd let my friends loose. He wasn't very big, but something about him frightened me. And there was one thing holding me back. I'm a total coward. So, instead of rushing him, I took a few steps away. I realized I was trembling all over. He stared at me with bright blue eyes, round as marbles under bushy white eyebrows. His white hair and short white beard were neatly trimmed. His face was wrinkled and red from running after us.
"Let us go!"
Nicky and Tara were both struggling and squirming to free themselves. The man was breathing hard, but he kept his tight grip on them.
"Let us go!"
"I'm here to help you,"
he said. He had a thin whisper of a voice.
"Stop fighting me. I'm your friend."
"Then let us go,"
Mickey shouted again.
"Okay, no problem."
The man opened his hands and released my two friends. Mickey and Tara jumped away from him. I stood studying the little man. Was he telling the truth? Was he a friend?
"How come you can see us?" Mickey demanded.
"If you were our friend, why have you been following us?" Tara asked.
"I wanted to make sure I had the right kids,"
the man replied.
"I didn't want to scare you, but I had to be absolutely sure."
"Why do you want us? Why should we believe you?" Mickey asked. I watched the Miller Street bus rumble past. I let out a sigh. "Okay, I'll catch the next one," I decided. "They come by every half hour."
"I can't answer your questions out here,"
the man told Mickey and Tara.
"You must trust me, and you must come with me. Now."
Chapter 9.
"Trust you? Why should we trust you?" Tara cried. "Let's go, Mickey. Max?"
She tugged her brother away. The little man turned his shiny blue eyes on her.
"I work with your parents,"
he said softly. Mickey and Tara stopped and turned around.
"My name is Dr. Samuel Smollett,"
the man said.
"I'm a scientist and an expert in the spirit world. I worked with your parents on their ghost project."
Mickey and Tara studied him. I started to feel a little calmer. The man seemed kindly and sincere. I took a deep breath and let it out slowly.
"You knew our parents?"
Tara asked. He nodded.
"I was there when they started their ghost experiments. I helped them capture evil ghosts and hold them prisoner."
The wind made his raincoat flap behind him. He wore a black suit underneath it, a white shirt with a stiff collar, and a plain blue tie.
"Your parents are brilliant scientists," he said.
"Oh, sorry. I mean they were brilliant scientists." "And what do you want with Mickey and Tara?" I asked. He kept his eyes on them.
"I think I can help you," he said.
"Help us? How?" Tara hung back. I could tell she was still suspicious. Dr. Smollett rubbed his beard.
"Where are your parents?"
he asked.
"I can help them, too."
Mickey kicked a clump of dirt off the sidewalk. "We don't know where they went," he said. "They've been gone a long time." Tara crossed her arms in front of her chest. "How can you help us?" she demanded. A smile slowly spread over Dr. Smollett's face, making his cheeks wrinkle.
"I have someone with me, at my lab," he said. "His name is Mr. Harvey. I believe he can help bring you back to life."
Mickey and Tara both gasped.
"You're kidding," Tara blurted out.
Dr. Smollett's smile faded.
"I'm not kidding. I think I know how to do it. I wish your parents were here. I owe them a lot. I want to help them."
Mickey sighed.
"I wish they were here, too," he murmured.
I felt the deck of cards in my pocket. Valentine, the nearly amazing, was already at the magic store. I wanted to get there to perform for him. Tara still had her arms crossed. "How can you bring us back to life?" she asked Dr. Smollett. He pulled his raincoat around him.
"I can't do it here in the middle of the street," he said, glancing around. "I need for you to come to my lab."
"Where is your lab?" Mickey asked. Dr. Smollett pointed with his head.
"On the other side of town," he said. "I'll take you there. You can meet Mr. Harvey. Then you can decide if you want me to help you."
Tara pulled back. "You're a total stranger. You want us to go with you?" Dr. Smollett shrugged.
"I only want to help you. If your parents were here, they would tell you to trust me. I don't know what else I can say."
He pointed again.
"My lab is just on the other side of town. You only have to stay a few minutes to meet Mr. Harvey. Then I will take you anywhere you want to go."
Mickey, Tara, and I huddled on the curb. I heard a cat crying from the house behind us. An SUV rolled past, loud rap music blasting from its open windows.
"Is this guy for real?"
Tara whispered. "I think he's telling the truth," Nikki said. I glanced at Dr. Smollett. "It might be some kind of trap," I said. "If it is a trap, Nikki and I will just go invisible," Tara said. "No problem." "It's one of the good things about being a ghost," Nikki said.
"If he is telling the truth," I said, "this could be an awesome day for you. This is what you've been praying for."
"I don't want to get excited yet," Nikki said.
"But I am. I really am. If this scientist really knows how to return us to life..."
He started jumping up and down. He couldn't hold back his excitement. Tara grabbed Nikki by the shoulders and held him down. "Don't get your hopes up."
"Too late," Nikki said. "My hopes are already up. I can't wait to be alive again."
Tara turned to me. "Nikki and I will go with Dr. Smollett," she said. "But you don't have to take the risk, Max. Go to the magic store. You don't want to be late for your audition."
"But..."
I started. Tara stepped up to Dr. Smollett. "Nikki and I will go with you to your lab," she said. "But Max has other things to do in town." Dr. Smollett frowned and shook his head. He raised his blue eyes to me.
"Oh, no,"
he said softly. "That won't do." He motioned for me to follow him.
"You come too, Max. We need you. You're going to be very important."
Chapter 10 Dr. Smollett's lab was in a three-story white stucco building. A barbed wire fence surrounded the place. I saw empty lots on both sides. No stores or houses on the block. He opened a gate with a key and led us to the white front door. I saw rows of tiny windows rising up to the flat red roof. All the windows were barred. As soon as we stepped inside, I heard the shrill cries. Animal cries, shrieks and howls, muffled behind a long row of closed doors. Dr. Smollett noticed my surprise.
"Don't pay any attention," he said. "We do a lot of animal experiments here. The animals are all well cared for."
We started down a long white hall. Even the carpet was white. The animal cries became fainter as we turned a corner that led into another white hall. Nikki and Tara glanced around nervously.
"Did our parents work here?" Tara asked.
Dr. Smollett nodded. He led us into a big square room filled with computer equipment. The walls were solid white. Bright lights beamed down from the low ceiling. I saw rows of laptops on two long tables. Cables stretched above our heads. Large electronic machines beeped and hummed against one wall. Red and blue lights blinked. Flat-screen monitors filled another wall. The monitors flashed numbers and equations and formulas. Dr. Smollett pulled off his raincoat and suit jacket and tossed them on a chair. He tugged down the sleeves of his starched white shirt. I could still hear the animal shrieks in the distance. Sad, frightened cries. They made me feel frightened, too.
Had we made a big mistake?
I swallowed hard. My mouth was suddenly very dry, and my hands felt as cold as ice. I jammed them into my jeans pockets and felt the deck of trick cards.
Will I get out of here in time to see Ballantyne?
The lab was neat and clean. The monitors blinked silently. The big electronic machines clicked and hummed. Dr. Smollett smiled as the three of us gazed around.
"This lab belonged to your parents," he told Nikki and Tara. "This is where they worked, and I worked here alongside them."
"Wow," Nikki said, shaking his head. He walked up to a long table of laptops.
"I think I remember being here. It's a faint memory, but it's coming back to me."
"Yes, I remember the computers," Tara said, "and all those wires and cables on the ceiling." She tugged at her dangling plastic earrings. She always pulled them when she was thinking hard or trying to remember something.
"We were here, Nikki," she said. "I know we were. Why can't I remember it better?"
Dr. Smollett leaned on the table with his hands.
"That's what we're here to find out," he said.
He pointed to the machines against the wall.
"Your parents and I worked here, capturing evil ghosts. Your parents were on a mission.
They believed that a lot of the evil in the world was caused by these spirits. Your parents found a way to capture them and keep them prisoner here. Dr. Smollett sighed. But one evil ghost, a man named Fears, escaped. I tried to fight him off, but he was too powerful for me. He injured me. He knocked me out. When I came to, all the evil ghosts had escaped. Fears had freed them all.
We've run into Fears, Nicky said.
Dr. Smollett's blue eyes grew wide. You and your sister were here in the lab on that awful day. Don't you remember? Don't you understand?
Nicky and Tara froze. They stared at him, speechless.
We didn't know, Tara said finally. You were visiting your parents here, Dr. Smollett said. When Fears escaped, he did something to your family, to all four of you.
You were here, I said. Didn't you see what happened to them?
Dr. Smollett shook his head. No, I didn't see anything. I was out cold.
He took a deep breath and smoothed back his white hair.
But I have someone here who saw everything, he said. I have a witness. I told you his name. Mr. Harvey.
Where is he? Tara asked. Nicky strode up to Dr. Smollett. Can we talk to him? Is he here now?
Dr. Smollett nodded. Mr. Harvey is the only one who saw everything that happened that day. He saw Fears escape. He saw Fears free the other ghosts. And he saw what Fears did to you and your parents.
The scientist loosened his tie. It was cool in the lab, but beads of sweat rolled down his forehead.
Mr. Harvey may know the secret. He may know how to bring your family back to life, he said, gazing intently at my two ghost friends.
Please, can we see him? Tara cried. Can we talk to him now?
Dr. Smollett cleared his throat. He tugged at his tie again.
Well,
there's a small problem. I'll show you.
He swung away from the table and walked quickly out of the lab. The door closed behind him. Nicky and Tara stared at each other. Then they turned to me.
I don't know what to say, Tara confessed. I'm shaking.
Me too,
Nicky said, his voice cracking. He pumped his fists in the air.
This is too good to be true. Do you think Mr. Harvey really can bring us back to life and tell us what happened to us?
The lab door swung open. Dr. Smollett stepped in, followed by another figure.
This is Mr. Harvey,
Dr. Smollett said. Tara's mouth dropped open. Nicky gasped. I stared hard at Mr. Harvey. My brain felt as if it was spinning in my head.
But, I stammered, Mr. Harvey is a chimp!
Chapter 11. Dr. Smollett led the chimp by the hand. Mr. Harvey loped into the room, bouncing as he walked. He kept shaking his head, his lips moving silently. Then he pulled back his lips and gave us a toothy grin. The chimp was about 3 feet tall. He wore bright red spandex bike shorts. He had a red baseball cap on his head. But as he crossed the room toward us, he pulled the cap off and tossed it across the lab.
Hoo, hoo, hoo.
He made chimp noises and bobbed up and down, his hands on his hairy knees. Tara stormed up to Dr. Smollett angrily.
"Is this some kind of stupid joke?" she demanded.
Nicky pulled Tara back. "Let's go," he muttered. "This is totally insane."
"No, wait,"
the scientist said. He petted the back of the chimp's head. Mr. Harvey flashed us another grin.
"I told you there was a problem," Dr. Smollett said.
"How could you do that to them?" I cried. "How could you get their hopes up like that?"
I felt as disappointed as Nicky and Tara.
"Please let me explain,"
Dr. Smollett said. He lifted Mr. Harvey onto a tall wooden lab stool at the counter. The chimp reached out and started to play with Dr. Smollett's white hair. Dr. Smollett pulled the chimp's hand away.
"Be a good boy, Mr. Harvey. This is a big day for you,"
he said. He turned to us.
"Yes, Mr. Harvey is a chimp, but he was here in the lab when Fears escaped. He saw what happened to you and your parents. He was the only witness."
"But he can't talk,"
Tara screamed.
"Hoo, hoo, hoo,"
Mr. Harvey said. He reached for Dr. Smollett's hair again.
Dr. Smollett raised a finger.
"But I found a way to make him talk," he said. "Just listen to me."
He motioned to the stools at the counter. The three of us took seats.
"It's simple, really," Dr. Smollett said. "It sounds more frightening than it is."
"What are you talking about?" Tara demanded.
"There's only one way to learn what Mr. Harvey knows," Dr. Smollett said. "We switch his brain with the brain of a live human."
Nikki and Tara both turned to me.
"You mean Max?"
Chapter 12. Dr. Smollett nodded. He narrowed his eyes at me. I slid off the stool.
"Bye,"
I said. I started toward the door.
"Max, wait," Tara called. "Just let him finish."
I turned to Dr. Smollett.
"You want to cut out our brains and switch them?" I cried. "Are you some kind of mad scientist, like from a horror movie?"
I realized I was shouting. Normally, I'm a pretty quiet, shy guy. But I was trembling with fear. I wanted out of there.
"There is no cutting," Dr. Smollett said. "No surgery. Max, there's no danger at all, I promise you."
"And how are you going to do it?"
I asked. My voice cracked. Dr. Smollett reached up to the cables that ran along the ceiling. He pulled down a set of headphones.
"I attach these to your heads. Then I allow the brain waves to flow freely between you and Mr. Harvey."
"Yeah, right," I said. "Then I'm going to pull off my head, turn it upside down, and fill it with M&Ms.
"I'm totally serious," Dr. Smollett said. "And I'm not crazy, Max. I know I can do this. When Mr. Harvey's brain waves are in your body, he will be able to speak."
"Hoo, hoo,"
Mr. Harvey said. He jumped up onto the lab table and did a little dance.
"Max, with the help of your brain, tongue, and vocal system, Mr. Harvey will reveal everything he knows," Dr. Smollett said.
I jammed my hands into my pockets to stop them from shaking. I realized my whole body was trembling.
He wasn't serious about this. He couldn't be serious. My brain, I stammered. "Will my brain switch to his body? Will I be a chimp?"
"Hoo, hoo."
Mr. Harvey stomped along the lab table and jumped into my lap. He gave me another toothy grin, raised both hands and started playing with my face, patting it and pulling at my cheeks.
"It will only take a few minutes,"
Dr. Smollett said. He tried to pull Mr. Harvey off me, but the chimp wrapped his arms around my waist and wouldn't let go. Tara laughed.
"He likes you, Max. I think he's in love." He wants my brain," I choked out.
"It won't even take half an hour," Dr. Smollett said. "I promise, no pain. You won't even feel it, Max. Mr. Harvey will reveal his secrets, then I'll switch the brain waves back. It's totally safe. And so fast you'll hardly realize it's happening at all."
I swallowed hard. Everyone was staring at me, even Mr. Harvey.
"I don't think so," I said. "In fact, read my lips. No way."
I handed the chimp to Dr. Smollett. Then I headed for the door again. I expected Nikki and Tara to follow me. But when I turned back, they hadn't moved from their lab stools.
"Stop staring at me like that," I snapped. "What's your problem?"
Tara tugged at one earring. "It would mean an awful lot to Nikki and me," she said. She gave me this pleading look, big eyes and a sad frown.
"Look, guys, you're talking about my brain," I said softly. I can't do it. I can't be a chimp. I don't even like bananas."
"But Dr. Smollett says it's not dangerous," Nikki said.
"Please, Max. If it could bring us back to life, you'd do it for us, wouldn't you, Max?" Tara asked.
"Hoo, hoo."
Mr. Harvey tried to leap onto my chest, but Dr. Smollett held him back. I turned to Dr. Smollett.
"Okay, where are the hidden cameras?" I asked. "We're on America's Funniest Home Videos right now, aren't we?"
He shook his head.
"No wacky videos," he said. "I've worked long and hard on this project. I owe Nikki and Tara's parents a lot. I hope I can repay them."
I squinted at him, studying his face.
"Do you swear it's not dangerous?" I asked.
He raised his right hand.
"I'm a scientist," he said. "I don't want to harm anyone. I just want to help the Roland family.
I turned to the chimp. He was hopping up and down now, grunting and scratching his stomach with his huge hairy hands. I didn't want my brain inside his head. I liked my brain just where it was. It was nice and cozy right there in my head. It was a good brain. In fact, the kids at school all called me Brainamon because I'm the smartest kid in class. Did I want them to start calling me Chimpamon? No way. I can't do this, I said. I avoided Nikki's and Tara's eyes. I knew I was letting them down. I knew they were desperate for any information, anything that could help them return to a normal life. I raised my eyes. They were both watching me. Both had eager, pleading expressions on their faces.
Well, maybe, I murmured.
Ooh, ooh, Mr. Harvey cried, as if he understood.
Max, no pressure, Dr. Smollett said. I don't want to rush you. I don't want you to do something against your will.
Thanks, I said.
I'll give you a week to think about it, he said. I'll come back for the three of you next Saturday.
He lifted Mr. Harvey into his arms, and then he led the way out of the lab. Near the door, I stopped and picked up Mr. Harvey's red baseball cap. I slipped it onto my head.
It fit perfectly.
Was that a good omen? Or a very bad omen?
Oh, wow,
I muttered. I tossed the cap across the room and followed my friends down the long white hall. This, I told myself, is going to be the longest week of my life. Chapter 13. Was there still time to perform for Ballantyne? I checked my watch. It was nearly 3 o'clock. Dr. Smollett drove us into town and led us off across the street from Hocus Pocus. That's the name of the magic store. To my surprise, I saw a long line of people waiting to get in. It stretched around the corner and down the block. I crossed the street and hurried to get in line, too. Guys were juggling duck pins and doing card tricks for each other. A tall, bald guy was pulling egg after egg out of his mouth.
You're still in time, Tara said. That's so cool.
I blinked. I was so excited about a chance to perform for Ballantyne, I'd nearly forgotten Nikki and Tara were there. I stepped in line behind a woman in a shiny black top hat and a tuxedo jacket. She was busy stuffing a mile-long chain of handkerchiefs into the jacket pocket.
It's going to be hours till you get in the store, Nikki said. That'll give you time to chill and stop thinking about Dr. Smollett.
Thanks for bringing it up again, I said. I sighed.
I can't believe how much you two have changed my life. My biggest problem used to be getting my hair to stay down.
It's still your biggest problem, Tara said. She tried to flatten my curly brown hair with the palm of her hand, but it bounced right back up.
Oh, sure, I moaned. Now I have to worry about having a chimp brain in my head.
The woman in the top hat spun around.
Are you talking to me, young man? She asked.
No, I said. I was talking to myself, just rehearsing a magic trick.
I think you'll be cute as a chimp, Tara teased.
You look like a chimp, I shouted. The woman in the top hat gasped.
Young man, what is your problem? She snapped. How dare you talk to me like that?
You're getting yourself in trouble, Tara said.
Just shut up, I cried.
The top hat woman gasped again.
Someone needs to teach you some manners, she shouted. If you were my son, I'd slap you in the face.
She flashed me an angry scowl and stomped away. The chain of handkerchiefs flew out of her pocket and trailed behind her.
Well, that's one way to move up in line, Nikki said.
Can't you two disappear or something, I said. Tara slid her arm around my shoulders.
Come on, Maxie, admit it. We've made your life exciting.
Maybe I don't want an exciting life, I said.
Then why are you in line? The man ahead of me asked.
I wasn't talking to you, I said. He pulled an egg out of his mouth, then turned his back on me.
Listen, guys, I can't do it, I said. I can't switch brains with a chimp. I'm sorry, but I don't look good in red spandex shorts.
Max, you heard what Dr. Smollett said, Nikki replied. He said it will only last a few minutes.
A few minutes is a long time, I cried. What if Mr. Harvey has fleas?
Tara squeezed my hand.
You have to do it, Max, she said softly. Don't you want my family to be alive again? Do you really want Nikki and me to be dead for the rest of our lives?
Please, go away, I said. I have to think about my card tricks now. I have to impress Ballantyne.
Nicky and Tara vanished. The line moved up pretty quickly. Finally, a man dressed in black stepped up to me. He had a badge round his neck, white with red letters. Magic staff. He put his hand on my shoulder.
Okay, next victim. Kid, you can go in the store now.
Would Ballantyne like my card tricks? I took a deep breath and stepped into the magic shop. Chapter 14. The tiny store was jammed with people. Everyone wanted to get a glimpse of Ballantyne the Nearly Amazing. Magicians filled the aisles between the display cases of magic tricks. They were all talking at once, talking about how their performances had gone and what Ballantyne had said to them. Some looked happy. Some were shaking their heads sadly.
"Better luck next time," a chubby bald man said to another chubby bald man. He squeezed the other man's shoulder, and a pigeon flew out from under the guy's coat.
Weird crowd, huh? I gazed around quickly. Was I the only kid? Yes. That has to be good, I told myself. At least Ballantyne will notice me. The line of magicians waiting to perform snaked around to the back room. I peeked ahead. I saw a small stage with a dark blue curtain behind it. A magician in a red cape stood on the stage doing a trick with three big silvery rings. And, seated across from the stage in a tall chair that looked like a throne, Ballantyne himself. Several people huddled around Ballantyne, including Mr. and Mrs. Hocus, the owners of Hocus Pocus. They all stared straight ahead in total silence, watching the magician do his ring trick. "My 2-year-old can do that trick," a magician in line ahead of me whispered. A few people snickered at that.
"Silence!"
a voice boomed through the store, Ballantyne's voice. "We must give these performers every chance." He stood up, and I got a better look at him. He was very lanky. He wore a glittery rhinestone turban on his head. He glowed in an aqua suit, very shiny and tight-fitting. Ballantyne's skin was deeply tanned. He had a narrow face with a thin black mustache. His eyelids drooped so low I couldn't tell if his eyes were open. In fact, everything about him drooped. He had the saddest, droopiest expression I'd ever seen on a human. No joke, he really did look as if his puppy had just died. Of course, I'd seen videos of him, and I'd seen him on TV shows, and he always had that sad, hangdog look on his face. I wondered if anyone had ever seen Ballantyne smile. The line moved up. I started to feel nervous. It felt like a frog was jumping around in my stomach. I pulled out my deck of cards, and my hands were sweaty. "How am I going to do my tricks with sweaty hands?" I asked myself. The frog leaped up to my throat. I suddenly felt like turning around and running away. Ballantyne was one of the most famous magicians in the world. Maybe the universe. What made me think I could impress him with my card tricks? I wiped my hands on my jeans. I started to open the deck of cards and drop them onto the floor. The cards spilled out around my feet. My heart began to pound. I bent down and started to scoop them up. When I stood up again, Nicky and Tara were at my sides.
"Don't be nervous, Max," Tara said. "Nicky and I are going to help you."
"Huh? Help me?"
I gasped. I felt a tap on my shoulder.
"You're next, kid,"
the man in black said. He gave me a little shove toward the stage. Chapter 15. Nicky and Tara moved forward with me. Ballantyne was talking to the people around him. He was sipping coffee from a large white mug. He glanced at me, and his expression got even sadder.
"Piece of cake," Tara said. "Tap knuckles, Max, and let's show off a little."
"I don't want to tap knuckles," I said.
Ballantyne sat down his coffee mug and stared at me.
"You want to tap knuckles?"
No, I said, just thinking out loud.
"Stop shaking like that, Max," Tara said. "Nicky and I are right here with you."
"Please go away," I shouted.
Ballantyne laughed.
"Is this a comedy act?"
"No," I said. I raised the deck of cards.
Ballantyne squinted at me from under his glittery turban.
"What is your name, kid?"
Nicky whispered. "Tell him you're Maxo the Magnificent."
"I'm not Maxo the Magnificent," I cried.
I heard people snicker. That's who you're not? Valentine asked. You're confusing me. Who are you? And what planet do you come from? That got a big laugh from everyone in the room.
Tell him you want to mystify his mind, Tara whispered.
Please, go away, I begged Nikki and Tara. Valentine laughed. This is a new approach, he told Mr. and Mrs. Hocus. The kid is kind of funny, Mr. Hocus said. Do you do any tricks or do you just stand there and act weird? Valentine asked. I'm going to do some card tricks that I invented, I said.
Card tricks are too dull, Nikki said.
Yeah, Tara agreed. Let's show him something more exciting. Please let me do my card tricks, I begged.
Valentine shrugged. I'm not stopping you, kid.
Let's do the floating wallet trick, Nikki said. That's more fun.
I felt him pull my wallet from my jeans pocket. I made a grab for it, but Nikki raised it high over my head.
Valentine and the others gasped.
They couldn't see Nikki. They just saw the wallet floating over my head.
I grabbed for it again. Nikki tossed it high to Tara.
Some people started to applaud. Valentine actually opened his eyes all the way.
The wallet flew high over my head.
I guess prices are going up, I announced.
That got a big laugh.
Finally, I grabbed the wallet away from Nikki. I struggled to shove it back into my jeans pocket.
Let me do my card tricks, I said.
But Tara pulled the deck of cards from my hand and started tossing cards across the room to Nikki. He caught them and tossed them back to her. I heard gasps around the room. I ran frantically back and forth trying to catch the cards. Nikki and Tara were ruining my act, ruining my one chance with Valentine.
The cards scattered across the floor. Valentine's jaw dropped. He looked even more confused.
Let's give him something to stare at, Tara said.
She and Nikki grabbed me by the armpits and lifted me.
Let me go! I screamed.
They lifted me higher. I was floating nearly a foot off the floor.
Valentine jumped to his feet. Everyone was chattering and gasping.
What do you call this trick? Valentine asked.
Nikki and Tara started to run. I looked as if I was flying across the room.
Too heavy, I heard Nikki groan.
I'm losing him, Tara grunted. Can't hold on.
No! I let out a cry as they dropped me.
I fell hard on my face. Pain shot down my body. I don't know how long I sprawled there, face down, waiting for the pain to fade. When I stood up, I felt warm liquid oozing over my lips, down my chin.
A nosebleed. I had a fierce nosebleed. My cards were scattered everywhere.
The room had grown totally silent.
With a loud groan, I pulled myself to my feet. I didn't dare look at Valentine.
My act was ruined. I'd practiced for weeks. I knew my card tricks were good. But it was all ruined, thanks to the two ghosts. I'd never been so embarrassed in all my life. I'd made a total fool of myself in front of one of my heroes.
With a sigh, holding one hand over my bleeding nose, I slumped toward the door.
Come on, I muttered to Nikki and Tara. Let's get out of here.
Chapter 16.
Wait, come back!
A voice boomed. I turned to see Valentine waving to me.
Was I seeing things? Did he actually have a smile on his face?
Wonderful, he said. What's your name?
Max Doyle, I said. Mrs. Hocus handed me a wad of Kleenex. I pressed it against my bleeding nose.
That's a very funny act you do, Valentine said.
He pulled off his turban and scratched his thick, curly white hair.
I know magicians don't tell their secrets, but you'll have to come back, Max, and tell me how you do that floating trick.
Come back? I stammered.
He nodded.
Yes, come back next Saturday.
You have passed the audition. You will go on to the next round.
He turned to Mr. Hocus.
Write down his name, Max Doyle. I definitely want to see him next week.
Thank you, I said.
Is that blood real or is it trick blood? Valentine asked.
Trick blood, I said. All part of the act.
Back in my room, I sprawled on my back on the bed. I stared up at the ceiling, taking deep breaths, thinking hard about Valentine and everything that had happened at the magic store. When Nikki and Tara appeared at the side of the bed, I wasn't happy to see them.
I need time to think, I said. I need peace and quiet. Can you take a hint?
No, we can't, Tara said, sitting down next to me. She gave me several soft face slaps.
Snap out of it, Maxie.
Why won't you leave me alone? I begged.
Because we haven't heard you say thank you yet, Nicky replied, dropping down beside his sister.
Thank you? I cried, sitting up.
Thank you for what?
For making your act so good. Valentine wants you to come back, Tara said.
You're joking, right?
I said. You didn't make my act good. You made my act a disaster. And...
My nose started to bleed again. I grabbed a wad of tissues and pressed them against my face.
We help each other, Tara insisted.
Admit it, Max. Nicky and I helped you. And next Saturday, you'll help us.
Huh?
I jumped out of bed. You mean switch brains with a monkey? You're crazy, you...
The front doorbell rang. I was the only one home.
Go away, I told Nicky and Tara. Maybe I do owe you thanks for what happened in the magic store, but no way will I switch brains with that chimp. Do you hear me? No way!
Is that a maybe? Tara asked.
She and Nicky vanished. The doorbell chimed again. I ran downstairs and pulled open the front door.
Tracy!
I gasped. There stood Tracy Wayne, in all her golden beauty. Tracy Wayne, the coolest, prettiest, most awesome girl at Jefferson Elementary. Tracy Wayne, standing on my front stoop. What did I do to deserve such amazing luck? Yes, I admit I have a crush on Tracy. I mean, I think it may be true love. Whenever I see her, my toes curl up, so it takes me hours to pull my shoes off. My face turns bright red. I start breathing through my mouth, making hee-haw sounds, and I get all tongue-tied and say everything backward. Is that true love? Or is it some kind of weird disease? I stared at Tracy, her blonde hair ruffled behind her in the wind, her olive-covered eyes locked on mine.
Goodbye, I said. I mean, hello! Yaw, yaw.
Hi, Max, she said. She glanced around. Can I come inside? I don't want my friends to see me at your house. That would be so uncool.
Yeah, I understand,
I said. I moved away so she could step inside. She hurried in and shut the door behind her. She was wearing a pale blue sweater and jeans. I glanced down and saw that my nose had dripped a couple of red spots onto her white tennis sneakers. She looked down, too.
Oh, what's that on my new shoes?
She asked.
Yeah. It's blood,
I said.
Ew, blood?
I tried to sound in control. I punched my fist in the air.
A bloody nose, I said. I got into a fight.
Tracy squinted at me.
You? Brainamon? In a fight?
Ha ha, I said. I don't want to brag, but you should have seen the other guy. She sneered at me. What really happened? You fell on your face?
Kind of, I said.
She glanced at the front window. No one can see me in here, right?
Right,
I said. What's down, Tracy? I mean, what's up?
Listen, Max, my icky cousin Stella is having a drippy, boring party. Her friends are all nerds and geeks, but my mom is making me go.
I suddenly started panting like an overheated dog.
Yeah?
I need to bring someone with me, Tracy said, but I don't want to invite any of my cool friends. Because they'd hate it. They'd hate it because it's going to be the worst, most geeky, most yuck-all party in history.
Cool, I said. I mean, yeah.
I can't think of anyone else in school uncool enough to go to this party, Tracy said. Except for you, Max. So how about it? With a loud sigh, I fell back against the wall, dazed, totally dazed. The invitation of a lifetime. Tracy Wayne was actually inviting me to a party.
Sweet,
I said. I mean, awesome. We'll go in separate cars, Tracy said. I don't want my friends to know I went to a party with you.
That's cool, I said. I mean, okay.
Okay, see you Saturday, Tracy said. She glanced around tensely. Can I go at the back door? I don't want anyone to see that I was here.
No problem, I said. Yeah, see you Saturday.
I watched her run out the back door.
She took off across the backyard running full speed and didn't look back. My luck is definitely changing, I told myself. Valentine, the nearly amazing, invited me back to perform for a second week, and Tracy Wayne invited me to a party. Was this the luckiest day of my life? Or was it the last happy Saturday I would ever have? Chapter 17. The week dragged by. I felt like I was moving in slow motion. Nikki and Tara kept begging me to go with them to Dr. Smollett's lab Saturday morning, but I tried to shove that thought out of my mind. All I could think about was performing magic tricks for Valentine and going to Tracy's cousin's party. Thursday after school, I went home with Aaron. I wanted to show him the tricks I planned to do for Valentine. Aaron looked even weirder than usual. That's because he still had the cell phone glued to his ear. "It's kind of nice for making calls," he said as we climbed the stairs to his room. "I never have to look for the phone. But it's hard to power up. I have to lean my head close to the charger and hold it there for about an hour." "How long are you going to keep it there?" I asked. Aaron shrugged. "My doctor tried everything to remove it, but he couldn't do it. He called the glue company to send someone to look at me. Maybe they can help." I set up my tricks on Aaron's desk. He sat down on his bed to watch. "Is that a new Jennifer Garner poster?" I asked, pointing to the wall behind his bed. Aaron had taped posters and pictures over the entire wall. "Yeah," Aaron said. "Check it out." I stepped up to the poster. It was a scene from the first season of Alias. Jennifer Garner's hair was blowing behind her. She had a shiny gun in her hand. "Hey!" I read the handwriting near the bottom. It was a message written in blue ink. "To Aaron, love always, Jennifer." "Wow!" I cried, turning to Aaron. "She signed this for you?" He shook his head. "No, I wrote that." "Cool, huh?" "Yeah, sure," I said. I walked back to the desk. "Here's a new trick. I made it up just for Valentine." I held up two drinking glasses. "The amazing moving water trick," I announced. "Watch carefully." The glass on the left was filled with water. I held a red handkerchief in front of the glasses, hiding them from view. "The water moves in mysterious ways," I boomed in my loud magician's voice. I whipped the handkerchief away, and both glasses were now half full. "Awesome," Aaron said. "The water really did move." "Keep watching," I said. I hid the glasses behind the handkerchief. "Move, water," I shouted. I pulled the handkerchief away, and all the water was now in the second glass. "Awesome," Aaron repeated. He clapped his hands. "How do you do that?" "Wait, I'm not finished," I said. I lowered the handkerchief again and said some magic words. This time both glasses were empty. The water had disappeared. Aaron jumped to his feet. "That is way cool," he exclaimed. He slapped me on the back. I staggered into the desk, and both glasses started to tumble off. Luckily, I made a great catch and grabbed them before they fell. "Valentine will go ape for that trick," Aaron said. "Please don't mention monkeys," I begged. He stared at me. "Huh? Excuse me?" "Never mind," I said. "Did you know I'm allergic to monkeys?" Aaron asked. "I have some more tricks," I said. Aaron picked up the two water glasses. "Bet I can do the water trick," he said. He raised the two glasses to his face and studied them. I laughed. "Since when are you into magic?" I asked. I heard a noise outside the bedroom window. Someone was shouting out there. I ran to the window, stuck my head out, and glanced around. I heard more shouts. Then I saw some kids in the yard across the street. The Wilbur brothers. They were beating up a little kid. He was screaming for help. I watched Billy Wilbur rip the boy's shirt up the back. Willie Wilbur held the kid down and gave his head a hard knuckle rub. "Hey, the Wilbur brothers are beating up a kid across the street," I called to Aaron. "So what else is new?" Aaron replied. "Dude, they beat that kid up every afternoon. It's their after-school activity." I watched for a few more seconds. The little kid kicked Willie in the leg, then ran away. A happy ending. When I turned back to Aaron, he had a worried look on his face. "Max, I'm in a little trouble here," he said. He raised his hands. Both hands were stuck inside the water glasses.
"Take them off. That's not how you do the water trick," I told him.
"I can't get them off, Aaron said. He held his hands out to me. Help me, okay? Pull. I tried pulling the glass off his left hand, then the right. I pulled as hard as I could, but I had to be careful. I didn't want to break the glass. I tried twisting them off. Then I tried pushing and pulling. No way. Those glasses were stuck on tight. I'm not happy about this, Aaron said, shaking his head. The cell phone in his ear shook, too. I had to laugh. He had a phone stuck to his ear and two glasses stuck to his hands. I know what we can do, Aaron said. My toolkit is under the bed. Get the hammer and smash the glasses. I frowned at him. I don't think so, I said. I need these glasses. They're trick glasses. They make it look like there's water inside. But there's no water in this trick. Come on, Max, use the hammer, Aaron begged. I'm desperate here. No way, I said. Your hands will be cut. You'll bleed all over the place. That's when Aaron's mum burst into the room. Her mouth dropped open when she saw the glasses stuck on Aaron's hands. I don't believe this, she screamed. This isn't happening. Aaron nodded. He had both hands raised in front of him. Yes, it is, he muttered. I have to take you to the emergency room again, his mom cried. It's Max's fault, Aaron exclaimed. It's his magic trick. He said I should do it. No, wait, I cried. That's not true. Aaron, you're grounded for another lifetime, his mom shouted. Then she turned to me. You made Aaron do this? When I get back from the hospital, I'm calling your mom. She should ground you, too. My heart pounded as I watched her drag Aaron to the car. Aaron turned and waved to me, his hands trapped inside the glasses. The door shut behind him. The car backed down the driveway. I watched until it disappeared down the street. Hey, I can't be grounded, I called after them. Saturday is going to be the biggest day of my life.
Chapter 18. Friday after school, Tracy pulled me into the teacher's parking lot. It was a warm, breezy day. The wind kept blowing her blonde hair into her face. She kept brushing it back with one hand, glancing around, making sure none of her cool friends saw her talking to me. She wore an olive-green sweater that matched her eyes, and olive cargo pants that matched the sweater that matched her eyes. Keep it together, Max, I told myself. But I realized I was already making that hee-haw sound I've been making lately whenever she comes near me. Remember about the party tomorrow evening? She asked. Hee-haw, I said. You and I... Remember we're going in separate cars? She said. And don't talk to me too much at the party, just in case someone cool shows up. Hee-haw, I said. No problem. And promise you won't embarrass me in any way, Tracy said. These kids are all geeks and freaks, but I still don't want to be embarrassed. Hee-haw, I said. Hee-haw. Tracy brushed back her hair. Then she handed me a flashlight. What's this for? I asked. It's a flashlight party, she said, rolling her eyes. My cousin's house is going to be totally dark, and you need a flashlight to get into the party. Cool, I said. No, it's totally uncool, Tracy replied. I told you my cousin Stella is a drip. She hurried away. I staggered back against one of the cars. I couldn't believe it. I was going to a flashlight party with Tracy Wayne. Of course, we wouldn't talk to each other or anything. But how exciting was this? Hee-haw, hee-haw. Why did I keep making that sound? Did it mean true love? I started to walk home. The wind blew at my back. I felt as if I could lift off the ground and float home. I felt a strong puff of air. At first, I thought it was just a gust of wind. Then I realized Nikki and Tara were at my sides. Maxie, why are you grinning like that? Tara asked. I stared at her. Don't know, I said. Just grinning. Are you grinning because you decided to be a nice guy and help Tara and me on Saturday? Nikki asked. I stopped walking. We were at the corner of Powell and Bleak, my street. The wind suddenly picked up. I shivered. It had been warm, but now the breeze felt cold. Gray clouds floated close overhead. Listen, guys, I said quietly, I know how badly you want me to do that chimp thing for you. I've been thinking and thinking about it all week. And? Tara demanded. I shook my head. I can't do it. It's just too scary and too dangerous.
They both groaned. Tara took my arm. "Come on, Max," she said. "You promised you'd help us, remember, when we first came to your house?" "I never promised I'd switch my brain with an animal brain," I said. "Look, guys, you know I'm your friend. You know I want to help you, but..." I didn't finish. The wind howled. A powerful gust shook the trees all around. Darkness fell, as if the clouds had dropped over us. The sky was suddenly black as night. Another howl, like a wild, angry animal. The tree leaves were all shaking now. The tree limbs, too. It grew even darker. The wind swirled around me. "What's up with this?" I cried. I staggered back as a creature lurched toward us. Out of the blackness, it shot forward. I saw its yellow eyes first, angry yellow eyes. Then I saw its black panther head, its curved teeth bared, its angry expression. A creature on two legs, huge and howling, its eyes fierce as fire. "No!" A shriek of horror escaped my throat. We started to run, all three of us, my two ghost friends and me, bent low into the howling, swirling wind. Struggling to run, to fight the wind and the darkness, and to flee this thing, I heard the hard thumps and bumps of its heavy paws on the pavement, a gust of hot wind, its breath on the back of my neck. What was it? Some creature of darkness, yellow-eyed and angry, and loping after us, taking its time, howling out its fury. The darkness grew deeper, colder. Hard to breathe. My leg muscles cramping. Hard to move. And then I saw the creature grab them. It grabbed Nikki and Tara in its front paws. Long, curved ivory talons closed around my friends. The creature bent low, holding the two ghosts high in front of it, and sprang away. Leaped into the darkness on two powerful legs, still howling. Those headlight eyes still prowling.
"Help us, Max! Help us!"
I heard their terrified cries and the howl of the wind. Chapter 19. I froze. The wind blew harder, pushing me back, shoving me away from the creature. The huge animal tossed back its head and sent a long howl up to the dark sky. I could see Nikki and Tara, gripped in its talons, squirming and thrashing, struggling to free themselves.
"Help us, Max! Max, help!"
What could I do? I gaped at the horrifying creature, like a monstrous black panther bounding on its hind legs. As it turned away from me, I saw its tail, curled up on its back like a long black snake.
"Help us, Max! Do something!"
My whole body trembled, violent shudder after shudder. The flashlight nearly slid from my hand. The flashlight! An idea burst into my mind, a desperate idea, but maybe, just maybe. I gripped the flashlight tightly. I raised it to my waist and pointed it at the howling creature. I remembered the evil ghost, Fears, who had wanted to destroy Nikki and Tara. I remembered the first time Fears came after me. Bright car headlights had scared him away. Fears couldn't stand bright light. It made him helpless. It burned his ghostly skin like fire. Would the light from this flashlight have the same effect on this creature? Could I surprise the big animal long enough for Nikki and Tara to escape? My hand shook so hard the flashlight again started to slide out. I gripped it in both hands. The creature leaped over a hedge and disappeared into the darkness on the other side.
"No!"
I cried out. I couldn't let it get away. Lowering my head, I ran full force into the hedge. Its prickly branches scratched my hands and face, but I pushed straight through to the other side. The creature had its back to me, its snake-like tail curled and uncurled on its furry back. Ducking against the onrushing wind, I ran hard to catch up with the monster, holding my friends tightly in front of itself, tilting its head back, howling into the rush of wind. "Well, I'm going to give you something to howl about," I thought. I raised the flashlight, aimed it at the creature's broad back, and clicked it on. Clicked it hard. Nothing happened. Nothing. No light. No light at all. Chapter 20. I shook the flashlight. I clicked it again. No, the light didn't flash on. I clicked it again. Again. My heart pounding each time. It was dead. The flashlight was dead.
The creature was escaping with my friends. Their screams had stopped. Had he strangled them with those long, curved talons? The wind swirled around me as I chased the monster, squeezing the flashlight in both hands, clicking it helplessly again and again. I didn't see the rock at the side of a driveway. With a loud cry, I stumbled over it and went sprawling onto my stomach on the ground. The flashlight hit the pavement, bounced hard, and a beam of bright white light shot out of it. Yes, it was working now. I dove for it, grabbed it up, struggled to my feet. Gasping for breath, I ran after the howling creature. I raised the flashlight, aimed the beam of light into the creature's black, furry back. The monster stopped. It raised its head and opened its mouth in an angry roar. I gasped as it whirled around to face me. Holding the flashlight in both hands, I raised the beam of light to the panther creature's face. It howled in pain, raised its front paws to shield its eyes from the light. Nikki and Tara dropped free, toppled to the ground. The light beam trembled, but I kept it on the monster's face. It let out another roar, softer this time. The creature tossed its head back and shook its paws as if trying to wave the light beam away. I expected it to turn and run, but instead it dropped to its knees, uttering low whimpers as it sank to the ground. I lowered the light beam, kept it focused on the creature's head, and watched the monster sink into the grass and start to dissolve. As I stared in shock, it melted into a lumpy black puddle, a round, black stain on the grass. Finally, my whole body shaking, I lowered the light beam. I clicked off the flashlight and ran to Nikki and Tara. They had climbed to their feet and were gazing around as if in a daze.
It's gone, Nikki cried.
Tara pulled off her red hat and shook out her dark hair.
Whoa, Max, you did it.
Nikki and Tara were fading in and out of view. I knew that their fright had drained a lot of their energy. I could see right through them. The darkness lifted as suddenly as it had come, and the wind stopped howling and swirling. I could see stars in the evening sky, and a bright full moon. I breathed a long sigh of relief. Nikki tapped knuckles with me.
"Way to go, dude," he said.
Tara was still shaking her head. She brushed tears off her cheeks.
"See, Max,"
she said in a whisper,
"there are so many ghosts and evil creatures out there. So many evil creatures who are our enemies because of the work Mom and Dad did."
She grabbed my arm. She was so faint I could barely feel it.
"Nikki and I aren't safe," she said. "We're never safe, and we won't be safe until we know the truth, until we know what happened to us and how we can return to life."
She faded even more. I could barely see the two of them now. They weren't even shadows. They were wisps of faint color.
"You saw what happened just now. You've got to help us, Max," Nikki whispered. "You've got to."
I pictured the evil panther creature. I pictured Nikki and Tara trapped in its long claws. My friends, my best friends being carried away. I swallowed.
"Okay,"
I said.
"I'll do it. I'll switch brains with the monkey."
Chapter 21. Saturday morning, I woke up early. I stared at myself in the dresser mirror. "Max, this could be the best or worst day of your life," I told my reflection. The reflection stared back at me and didn't reply. What a day I had planned. First, I'd switch brains with a chimpanzee. Then I'd perform magic in front of one of the world's greatest magicians. Then I'd go to a party with Tracy Wayne. With a day like that, it's no wonder I was talking to myself. A few hours later, Dr. Smollett met Nikki, Tara, and me at the place where we'd first met, and drove us to his lab. He seemed very cheerful. He kept talking about what a great day this would be for Nikki and Tara. I slumped in the back seat and hardly said a word. I wanted to shove open the car door and run as far as I could. But I'd made a promise to my friends, and I was going to grit my teeth and keep my promise. "This will all be over soon," I told myself. I forced myself to think about Valentine and the magic tricks I had planned to show him. As we walked through the long white halls of the lab,
I heard the distant shrieks and wails of animals again. Their cages were hidden away. Dr. Smollett led us to the same room as before. On the long table, a row of computer monitors blinked and glowed. Machines hummed against the wall. Two tall stools had been set near the computer table. Dr. Smollett motioned for me to sit on one of them. My legs were trembling so hard I had trouble climbing onto the stool. Dr. Smollett put his hand on my shoulder.
"Don't worry, Max," he said softly. "You'll be fine. You'll see."
He typed for a few moments on the nearest keyboard, then he hurried away to bring in Mr. Harvey. Nikki and Tara had been admiring all the computers. When Dr. Smollett left the room, they rushed over to me.
"This is so awesome of you," Tara said. "I can't believe you're doing this for us."
"I can't either," I muttered.
"We're going to owe you big time," Nikki said.
"Tell you the first thing we're going to do for you," Tara said. "We're going to stay away from the magic store. Nikki and I are not going to help you with your act."
"Oh, thank you," I cried. "That's the best news I've heard all day. And what else are you going to do for me?"
They didn't have a chance to answer. Dr. Smollett returned, leading the chimpanzee.
"Mr. Harvey is ready to go," he said.
He gave the chimp a gentle head rub. A big toothy grin spread over Mr. Harvey's face. Dr. Smollett sat Mr. Harvey on the stool next to me. The chimp started to chatter and hop up and down. He reached out a big hand and mussed my hair.
"Settle down, Mr. Harvey," Dr. Smollett scolded. "I mean it, settle down."
The chimp seemed to understand. He stopped chattering and dropped limply onto the stool.
"Mr. Harvey was here the day Fears did his dirty work," Dr. Smollett said to Nikki and Tara. "Once the chimp's brain waves are inside Max, he'll be able to tell us everything he saw."
He turned to me.
"It won't take long," he said. "As soon as we learn what Mr. Harvey knows, I'll switch the brain waves back, and you'll be back to normal, Max."
I shoved my hands in my pockets to stop them from shaking. I don't think I'd ever been this terrified in my life. The chimp grinned at me, stuck out his tongue, and made a spitting noise.
"I'm sorry," I said. "I can't do this. I just remembered something I forgot to do."
"Max, what did you forget?" Tara asked.
"I forgot to leave."
Dr. Smollett smiled.
"Funny," he muttered.
He slipped a pair of headphones over my head. I saw that they were attached to a maze of wires that ran into the computers.
"Max, don't be so nervous," he said. "I'm a doctor, remember?"
He turned and put another pair of headphones on the chimp's head. Mr. Harvey made a spitting noise at Dr. Smollett.
"If I start spitting like that, just smack me," I said.
I was trying to make a joke, but everyone was too tense to laugh.
"Ready for the brain waves transfer," Dr. Smollett said.
He patted me on the shoulder.
"Don't look so worried, Max," he said. "You won't feel a thing."
Chapter 22. My mouth suddenly felt dry as cotton. I couldn't swallow. I realized I was breathing hard, gasping for breath, even though I was sitting still. Mr. Harvey sat on the stool beside me. He held on to the headphones and bounced gently up and down. Dr. Smollett began typing frantically on a computer keyboard.
"Max, watch the monitor," he shouted.
His voice was muffled because of the headphones I was wearing. Nikki and Tara stepped up beside me.
"This is totally awesome of you," Tara said. "I repeat, we'll owe you big time."
"Yes, you will," I agreed. On the monitor screen, I saw my profile and the chimp's profile. Leaning over the keyboard, Dr. Smollett kept typing. I felt a buzzing in my head. Soft at first, then louder. On the screen, my head and the chimp's head slid closer together. The headphones began to vibrate. I reached my hands up and pressed against them. The buzz increased to a roar. Nikki and Tara held me by the shoulders. The three of us stared at the monitor as my head and the chimp's head moved closer, closer together, closer, until Mr. Harvey's head covered mine. I felt a whoosh of wind, as if someone had blown a puff of air inside my head. It lasted only a second, a strange, frightening feeling that made my whole body shudder. I gripped the headphones as if holding onto a lifeboat, and suddenly I felt as if I was underwater. The air seemed to ripple like water, and I felt light, floating. The monitor screen blurred. The white lab walls gleamed brighter and brighter until they washed everything else from my sight. I blinked, and everything slowly drifted back into focus.
"Max, are you okay?"
I could hear Tara's voice, but it sounded very far away.
"Max? Max?"
I blinked a few more times. Then I glanced around, struggling to see clearly, my head still buzzing. Mr. Harvey hadn't moved from the stool next to me. He still gripped his headphones and bounced up and down. Dr. Smollett was typing on his keyboard. Nikki and Tara stood next to me, their faces creased with worry. I stuck my tongue out and made a loud spitting noise at them.
"Oh, no! Why did I do that?"
"Sorry," I said. I tugged the headphones off.
"Max, how do you feel?" Dr. Smollett asked.
He stepped over to my stool and took the headphones from me.
"Are you okay?"
"I guess," I said. "I don't feel very different."
"Oh, thank goodness," Tara cried.
"Hoo, hoo, hoo,"
I said.
"Huh? Monkey noises?"
Dr. Smollett smiled and nodded.
"I think the transfer is working," he said.
"I still feel like me," I said. "I don't really feel, hoo, 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 very different." I tested my memory. I remembered my name, my address, my phone number. Yes, I was still Max Doyle. The brains didn't switch. I was still me. I suddenly thought about lunch. Would there be a banana? Dr. Smollett kept smiling at me.
"Success! I'm very pleased," he said. "It will take a short while for the chimp's brain to settle into Max's brain, but when it does..."
"Hoo-hoo,"
I said, hopping up and down on the tall stool.
"Hoo-hoo-hoo."
"When the brain settles down," Dr. Smollett continued, "Mr. Harvey will be able to tell us, through Max, everything he saw."
"Hoo,"
I said, nodding. I reached out one hand and worked at removing a piece of fuzz from Tara's shirt.
"Max, do you feel totally weird?" Nikki asked.
I hopped up and down.
"Hoo-hoo,"
I said. "Yeah, kind of weird. It's like there's someone else in here with me." Dr. Smollett picked up the chimp.
"Mr. Harvey seems a little dazed," he said. "I'm going to take him to the kitchen over there and give him something to eat."
He turned and started walking toward a white door at the far end of the lab. Mr. Harvey waved to us over Dr. Smollett's shoulder.
"When I come back, we'll question Max," Dr. Smollett said. "At last, you two kids will have some answers."
He and the chimp disappeared into the kitchen. Nikki and Tara had big grins on their faces. They were practically hopping up and down, too.
"Max, this is so awesome!" Tara cried. "You're going to tell us what happened to our family, and maybe you can tell us how to be alive again."
"Thanks, dude," Nikki said. He slapped me a high five. "Wish Mum and Dad were here," Tara said.
"Hoo, hoo,"
I replied. I suddenly wanted to scratch my chest. I struggled to think clearly.
"You know, I still, hoo, hoo, feel like me," I said. My voice came out scratchy and high. "And I still think like me," I told them. "But I want a banana really badly."
Nikki and Tara laughed. They thought I was joking. I shut my eyes for a moment and thought really hard. Was the chimp's brain really inside mine? If so, why did I still think like me? Yes, I was making chimp sounds, and yes, I had some chimp feelings. But what about the chimp memories? What about the things Mr. Harvey was supposed to reveal to Nikki and Tara? Were those memories inside my head?
"Max, why are your eyes closed?" Nikki asked.
"What is it?" Tara demanded. "Are you okay? What are you thinking about?"
"Good question.
I was thinking about bananas, and about scratching myself."
"But what else?"
"Where were the important chimp memories? Where was the important information? Uh-oh, I murmured. A wave of dread swept over me, making me feel heavy and cold. Hoo-hoo, I said. Something is wrong, guys. Something is terribly wrong. Chapter 23. They stared at me with their mouths opened. I struggled to think clearly. If only I had a banana. Or maybe some grapes. I suddenly had to go to the bathroom. Should I do it in my pants? Hoo, hoo, I said. I shook my head hard. No time for monkey talk. I had to tell Nikki and Tara what I was thinking. Listen, guys, I said in my scratchy voice. Something is very wrong. Hoo, hoo. The chimp brain is inside me. I can, hoo, hoo, feel it. Yes? Tara asked. And? I reached up to her hair and started to work my fingers through it, grooming her, searching for fleas. She pulled my arm away gently. Max, what are you trying to say?
The chimp brain is empty, I cried. I started hopping furiously up and down. Hoo, hoo.
I don't understand, Nikki said. What do you mean?
Give him a chance, Tara scolded her brother. He's part chimp. Take some time to get the words out.
I took a deep breath.
The brain is empty, I said, speaking slowly, forcing myself to concentrate. It doesn't have any memories. There are no memories of you or your family.
No way, Tara cried. You're just not thinking right, Max.
There's nothing to think about, I said. I want a banana really badly. That's my only thought. Don't you see? Something is wrong. I have chimp thoughts, but no memories at all.
I jumped down from the stool. I started toward the kitchen.
Where are you going? Tara cried. She and Nikki hurried after me. I was lumbering from side to side, like a chimp.
Don't panic, Max. Tara said, Dr. Smollett will be able to get the memories from your brain. You have to wait for him.
Hoo, hoo, I said. There's something weird going on.
I wobbled across the lab to the kitchen. Nikki and Tara ran close behind me. I pulled open the door and we stepped inside. No one there. An empty room. And it wasn't a kitchen. It was an empty closet with an open door at the other end.
Dr. Smollett! Nikki and Tara both shouted, Dr. Smollett, where are you?
No answer. All I could hear were the shrieks and cries of the lab animals far down the hall.
Dr. Smollett! Dr. Smollett!
We ran up and down the long halls, searching for him, shouting his name. No answer.
Hoo, hoo,
I said, hopping up and down angrily.
He and Mr. Harvey have run away.
Chapter 24. The words made me dizzy. I sank onto the floor. I shook my head sadly.
He took my brain,
I whispered.
I'm half chimpanzee.
Nikki and Tara dropped down beside me.
We'll find them, Tara said. Don't worry, Max. We'll search the whole town if we have to.
We'll get the rest of your brain back, Nikki said. I felt sick. My stomach tightened into a knot. I didn't even want a banana anymore.
My brain, part of my brain was inside that chimp, and part of his brain was inside me.
I didn't understand. Was it some kind of evil trick? What if we never saw Dr. Smollett again? Would I be forced to spend the rest of my life as Max the Incredible Monkey Boy?
Oh, I murmured. No. Hoo-hoo. This can't be happening to me.
I glanced at my watch.
I'm late, I cried, jumping up. I'm late for my tryout with Ballantyne.
Nikki and Tara helped me up. We'll get you to the audition, Tara said. Don't worry.
Ooh,
I said. I started picking at one of Tara's ears. Why couldn't I keep my hands off her head?
I'm half chimp, I wailed. How can I do my tricks?
Just act like everything is okay, Nikki said. I'll bet no one even notices.
Yeah, right, I said, rolling my eyes.
Halfway through my tricks, I'll start picking through Ballantyne's hair.
You'll think it's part of the act, Tara said. We walked down the long white halls. I could hear animals shrieking and crying on all sides. I wanted to sit down and cry, too.
My brain, my beautiful, awesome brain, was half chimp.
Nikki and Tara shouted Dr. Smollett's name all the way down the hall again. Still no reply. The front door stood wide open. Dr. Smollett and Mr. Harvey must have run out in a very big hurry to get away.
But why? Why run off and leave me like this?
Go to the magic store and do your best, Tara said. Nikki and I will search this whole town. We won't give up until we find Dr. Smollett and that chimp. We'll get your brain back, Max. I promise.
Yes, we both promise, Nikki said.
Why didn't their promise cheer me up?
I had to go home to get my magic kit.
We climbed onto the Miller Street bus and walked all the way to the back.
Hoo, hoo,
I said, shaking my head sadly. Nikki and Tara sat down with their heads lowered, their hands clasped tightly in their laps. All three of us felt sick with worry. We didn't feel like talking. A few blocks later, the driver suddenly stopped the bus. He climbed out of his seat and walked to the back.
"Young man," he called, "would you please stop swinging on the poles?"
"Oops."
"Sorry,"
I muttered. I let go of the pole and dropped down beside Nikki and Tara. I didn't even realize I was swinging.
"Hoo, hoo, hoo,"
I said. The driver stared at me for a long time.
"Do you kids think you're funny?"
he snarled.
"Hoo,"
I said.
"You know who," he snapped. "You, that's who."
"Hoo," I said. Shaking his head, he walked back to the front and started the bus up. I wanted to swing some more, but Nikki and Tara held me down.
"You'll be okay, Max," Tara said softly. "I promise. You'll be perfectly okay."
Of course she was wrong. Chapter 25 Mom drove me to the magic store. I sat beside her and stared straight ahead. I gripped my magic kit tightly in my lap.
"You're very quiet today," Mom said.
"Who?"
I replied.
"Who?
You!"
she laughed. "Are you worried about the famous magician?"
"Who?"
I said.
"You know, Ballantyne," she replied.
"I'm a little tense," I managed to say. I put my lips together and made a loud, juicy, spitting noise.
"After your tryout, I'll drive you straight to Tracy's party," Mom said.
I made another spitting noise.
"The party won't be that bad," Mom said, pulling into a parking space. "I thought you had a crush on Tracy Wayne."
"Who?"
I said.
"Ha ha, very funny," Mom replied, rolling her eyes. "You're in a very weird mood."
"Well, yeah, Mom. You see, I've never been half chimpanzee before." That's what I wanted to say, but of course I didn't.
I thanked her for the ride and climbed out of the car. Again, there was a big crowd around the magic store. The line of magicians stretched down the block. I wobbled my way to the back of the line. Luckily, I had packed a couple of bananas and a few tangerines in my magic kit to keep up my energy. The woman in front of me had long red hair. I wanted to groom it for her, but somehow I managed to keep my hands to myself. The line moved up slowly. I couldn't help myself. I hopped up and down and shouted, "Hoo, hoo, hoo!" The red-haired magician spun around.
"What's your problem, kid?"
she asked. I shrugged.
"Just warming up my voice," I said.
I picked a piece of lint off her poncho. Then I pulled back my lips and flashed her a toothy grin. She rolled her eyes and spun back around. Finally, my turn came to perform for Ballantyne the Nearly Amazing. He sat on his tall chair with Mr. and Mrs. Hocus at his sides. Today, he was dressed all in black. Black trousers, a black turtleneck, and a black turban on his head.
"Hello, Max. Nice to see you back," he boomed in his deep voice.
"He remembered me." I climbed onto the little stage and took a bow. I'd brought a new trick with me because I couldn't do the drinking glass trick. Aaron's doctor had to break the glasses to get them off his hands. I set a top hat upside down on the table on the stage. Then I raised a pitcher of water over the hat.
"Hoo, hoo!
The pitcher of endless disappearing water," I announced.
The idea was that I would pour the pitcher of water into the hat. The pitcher would keep pouring and pouring. It would never empty. And when I picked up the hat, it would be totally dry. No water. It wasn't a hard trick. I'd practiced it hundreds of times. But as I raised the pitcher, I suddenly got a better idea. I decided to stand on my head and pour the water.
Hoo, hoo, hoo,
I said. My chest suddenly itched a lot. I stopped to scratch it with both hands. Then I stuck out my tongue at Valentine and made a loud spitting noise. His smile faded. He leaned forward in his big chair. He had a confused look on his face.
Hoo, hoo.
I started to stand on my head. But then I had an even better idea. I jumped onto the table. I kicked the top hat into the air.
Hoo, hoo,
I cried. I scratched myself some more. Ha, ha! Valentine laughed. He's a monkey. I get it. He's a monkey magician. Mr. and Mrs. Hocus started to laugh, and soon everyone in the back room at the store was laughing. I made more spitting noises. I did a few cartwheels over the tabletop.
Hoo, hoo, hoo.
Then I poured the pitcher of water over my head. Ha, ha, ha! Valentine laughed some more. Chimp magic. Look at him. He's very believable. Ha, ha! I wobbled off the stage. I felt kind of sick. That wasn't the trick I'd rehearsed. Valentine was laughing. Did that mean he liked it? I wanted to climb a tree and hide on the highest limb and eat leaves. But I saw him waving me over. He climbed down from his chair and led me to the side of the room. My heart was pounding. I couldn't stop hopping up and down. Valentine rested his hand on my shoulder.
Chimp magic, huh? He said softly. Funny. Very original. It made me laugh, kid.
But it's not what I'm looking for. I pressed my lips together and made a loud spitting sound.
Don't be disappointed, Valentine said. It was a nice try, but that monkey act just doesn't make it.
He patted my shoulder and gave me a gentle shove toward the door. Come back in a few years. Okay, Max? I slumped through the store. I gazed at the line of eager magicians. Two or three of them would be lucky. They would become students of Valentine's. But not me. I'd blown my big chance. I'd poured water on myself and spit in Valentine's face. How stupid was that? And all because of my two ghost friends, Nikki and Tara. Where were they, I wondered. Had they tracked down that evil creep Smollett? They had to keep their promise. No way could I keep on going with this chimp brain inside me. I pictured myself in school, sitting in class, pouring water over my head, doing cartwheels, and spitting in Ms. McDonald's face.
I need to get my brain back to normal, I shouted.
Several magicians turned and gaped at me.
Sorry, I said. That's part of my act. Brain magic. Ha ha.
Hoo hoo.
I hurried across the street to my mom's car. Now it was time for Tracy's cousin's birthday party. My big chance to be at a party with the coolest girl in school. Could I keep my monkey brain under control? Chapter 26 Tracy's cousin Stella greeted me at her door. She was a tiny girl with curly brown hair and pointy ears that poked out of her hair and stood straight up like mouse ears. I knew she was a sixth grader like me, but she looked about 4 years old, and she was wearing a frilly, lacy party dress that made her look like some kind of doll that should be kept on a shelf.
Hoo hoo, happy birthday,
I said. I handed her the present Mum had wrapped for me.
Thanks, Stella said. What is it?
I don't know, I said. Something my Mum picked out. She tossed it into the house. Do you have your flashlight? She asked. You can't come in unless you have it. It's a flashlight party. I held up my flashlight.
Hoo hoo,
I said. I hopped up and down and scratched Stella under the chin. That's not funny, she said. Tracy said you were kind of odd. She pushed open the screen door. I guess you can come in.
Thanks, I said.
Hoo hoo,
Tracy said you were really awesome.
That was a total lie, but I was trying to be nice. I mean, it was her birthday and everything.
Tracy thinks I'm a wimp, Stella said, but a smile spread over her tiny face.
We're going to play Spin the Flashlight later. I'll show her who's a wimp.
Spin the Flashlight? This really was a flashlight party. My first...
Stella led me into the living room. It was decorated with pink and yellow balloons everywhere, and it was crowded with kids.
Tracy is already here, Stella said. She pointed. I saw Tracy, her back to me.
Hoo, hoo,
I said. Stella squinted. Why do you keep saying that, Max?
I shrugged. Just a bad habit, I said. I started across the room. Kids were shining their flashlights into each other's eyes and laughing. Two boys were using their flashlights to poke each other in the stomach. I knew they had to be sixth graders, but they all looked totally babyish.
Hi, Tracy, I said.
She turned around and smiled at me. I nearly fainted.
Tracy Wayne smiled at me.
Max, she said, compared to the drippy nerds in this room, you're almost okay.
Wow, a compliment.
Hoo, hoo,
I said. I pulled up my shirt and scratched my belly with both hands. Tracy groaned.
I take back what I just said, she said.
Stella hurried over.
Max, why did you do that? I'm a party animal, I said.
It's time for our flashlight games, Stella said. She turned and shouted for everyone to pay attention. Flashlight games, everyone! This is going to be way cool!
Hoo, hoo,
I said.
Tracy leaned close and whispered in my ear. Max, I'm warning you, don't embarrass me.
No problem, I said. I stuck out my tongue and spit all over her.
Ugh!
Tracy cried, wiping my spit off her chin.
How funny are you?
Not! She hurried to the other side of the room. I clenched my hands into fists. I knew I had to hold myself in. I had to be totally on guard at all times. No way did I want Tracy to know about my little monkey problem. I hung back and stayed quiet when the games began. But to my shock, the games went on for hours. You have no idea how many flashlight games there are. Stella and most of the other kids seemed to be having a great time. Tracy stayed against the wall, making calls on her cell phone to all her cool friends. I hung in another corner, trying not to act like a chimp and give myself away. Finally, I couldn't help it. I opened my flashlight, pulled out a battery, and started sucking on it, making loud, disgusting sucking noises.
Do you have to ask why?
Because I was part chimpanzee. Stella stopped the game. Her mouth dropped open.
Max, what are you doing?
She started shouting for her mom. Her mom came running into the room. She looked just like Stella, only maybe a few inches taller. She pulled the battery from my mouth.
Young man, are you trying to be funny? She asked. Do you know how dangerous this is?
I saw Tracy staring at me. She was blushing bright red. I had totally embarrassed her. Something inside me snapped. I wanted to be nice, well-mannered, quiet Max Doyle. But I had a monkey problem, and there was nothing I could do about it. The monkey took over. I wobbled to the food table. I grabbed up a big hunk of potato salad and flung it at Stella's mom. It hit her on the forehead with a wet smack and dripped down her face. I heaved another pile of potato salad and hit the wall above the fireplace.
Max, stop it! Are you crazy? Stop it!
That was Tracy screaming at me.
Could I stop it?
No way. I climbed up on the food table, raised a big bowl of pretzels above my head, and heaved it at a group of shocked kids across the room. Kids screamed as pretzels flew everywhere. Then I dug both hands into the chocolate icing of the birthday cake, rubbed some of it in my hair, and flung a big hunk at Stella. It hit her in the chin and dripped down her neck. I was chattering like a chimp. I couldn't stop myself. I reached for two more handfuls of cake and saw Stella and her mum and Tracy storm toward me. Stella and her mum grabbed my arms and jerked me down to the floor. I struggled to climb back onto the table, but they held me tightly.
Tracy, take your friend home, Stella's mum commanded angrily. He is acting like a wild animal. Take him home at once.
Tracy's face was bright red. She was shaking with anger and embarrassment.
I'm so sorry,
she whispered, lowering her head.
Really so sorry.
She grabbed me and pulled me to the front door.
Max, what is your problem?
she asked through gritted teeth.
Hoo-hoo,
I said. I still had hunks of chocolate cake in my hands. I rubbed them in Tracy's hair. Then I started grooming her with both hands. Would she ever speak to me again?
Three guesses.
Chapter 27. How was the birthday party? Mom asked.
Great,
I said. Did you make a lot of new friends?
Oh, sure,
I said. I hurried up to my room before I could start chimping it up again. Nikki, Tara, are you here? I called, searching for them. Where are you? Did you find Dr. Smollett? Silence. No sign of them. I let out a long sigh. My life was ruined. Ruined forever. I hopped onto my bed and began jumping up and down, making chattering noises. Wait. Suddenly I had a hunch. I just knew where I'd find Nikki and Tara. Back at Dr. Smollett's lab. Don't ask me why. I had the strongest feeling that they were back there. I had to go. I had to see if my hunch was right. Mom was busy in the kitchen. I sneaked past her and let myself out the front door. The moon was already high in the sky. The night breeze felt cold against my face. Wobbling like a chimp, I hurried to the bus stop. I leaped onto a low tree limb and ate some leaves as I waited for the bus. It didn't come for nearly half an hour. Finally, I climbed inside and walked to the back.
Hoo, hoo.
I wanted to swing on the poles, but I forced myself to stay in my seat. The bus bumped along Miller Street, then turned when it got to town. There were two other kids on the bus, but they didn't go to my school. I got off half a block from the lab. Seeing it again, my heart began to thump. My legs felt as if they weighed 1,000 pounds as I pulled open the gate, walked past the barbed wire fence, and stepped up to the front door. This is crazy, I thought. Why would Dr. Smollett come back here? How can I even get in? My hand shook. I tried the front door. Was it locked? No. I pulled it open easily. As soon as I stepped inside, I heard the cries and howls of the lab animals hidden somewhere beyond the white walls. I wanted to find them and set them all free. But I knew that getting my brain back to normal was more important right now. I strode quickly down the twisting white halls. I was surprised that I remembered the way. The door to the lab stood open. I took a deep breath and stepped inside.
Oh!
I let out a cry when I saw Dr. Smollett and Mr. Harvey in the middle of the room. A smile spread slowly over Dr. Smollett's face.
Come in, Max, he said. Mr. Harvey and I have been waiting for you.
Chapter 28. I froze in the doorway, my whole body locked in fear. Before I could move, Dr. Smollett rushed across the room and grabbed me by the shoulders. He was surprisingly strong. He half-dragged, half-carried me to the tall stool beside all the computers. And I realized that Mr. Harvey was already hooked up. The chimp had headphones on. He was sitting quietly, watching the whole thing. Dr. Smollett took a cable and wrapped it tightly around my chest and arms. He quickly tied me to the tall stool beside the chimp.
What are you going to do?
I finally managed to say. He ran a hand through his white beard. His cold smile grew wider.
I'm going to finish the job, he said. I only switched half your brains before. Now I'm going to complete the transfer. You will be a total chimp.
He reached for a set of headphones.
But why?
I choked out.
Setting my trap, Dr. Smollett said. Nikki and Tara's parents ruined my life. Now I'm going to trap the whole family and pay them back.
What are you talking about? I shouted.
I didn't work for the Rolands. I worked for Fears. I've waited a long time to pay them back for what they did to us ghosts.
By making me a chimp? I said.
He nodded.
Nikki and Tara will do anything to save you, won't they? Even stay here with me in my lab? I'm going to make your two ghost friends a deal. I'll return your brain to normal, if they agree to stay here. You see, I'm going to use Nikki and Tara as bait to reel in their parents.
Your plan will never work, I said. Give me a chance to talk with Nicky and Tara. Maybe...
He knew I was stalling for time. His blue eyes grew cold. He tightened the cables around me, making sure I couldn't escape. Then he moved to a computer keyboard and started typing. I squirmed and struggled to pull myself free. I shook my head back and forth, trying to toss off the headphones. The chimp chattered and hopped up and down on the stool next to me. I heard a low electronic hum. I shut my eyes and clamped my teeth together.
Oh, no. Oh, no. This can't be happening, I thought. He's going to suck out the last part of my brain and leave me with a chimp brain. Max, the chimp. Max, the chimp brain. Forever.
The hum grew louder.
What could I do? I had to escape. But how?
The hum made my head vibrate. It grew louder till it drowned out all sound, even my thoughts. And then I felt a soft puff of air inside my head, like a puff of smoke, floating over my mind, blanking it out, blanking it all out. I opened my eyes. I blinked several times, struggling to focus. Dr. Smollett stood tensely at the keyboard, rubbing his beard, watching me. I picked up my head. I scratched my chest.
Hoo, hoo, hoo,
I said. Chapter 29. I felt like hopping up and down. Then I thought, how nice it would be to climb a tree and pick some tasty leaves. But I couldn't move. I was tied to the stool.
Hoo, hoo.
It worked,
I heard Dr. Smollett say.
I am a genius. I have transferred a chimp's brain into a living boy.
Who?
I didn't understand. What was he talking about? Did he plan to set me free? Where did he keep the bananas? Where were the trees for me to climb?
Chee, chee, chee,
I called, trying to get his attention. But something strange was happening to Dr. Smollett. He suddenly began acting totally weird. His arms flew up. He spun around.
"Let me go!" he screamed. "Get off me! Nicky! Tara, let me go!"
Who was he screaming at? I didn't see anyone else in the room except for the other chimp. Dr. Smollett started staggering backward. He was thrashing his arms and shouting. It looked like someone was pushing him to the tall stools, except I couldn't see anyone there. The next thing I knew, the other chimp was set free. I expected him to run away, but he didn't. He climbed down from the stool and stood, scratching his head. Squirming and kicking, Dr. Smollett plopped down on the stool next to me.
"You can't do this to me!" he screamed. "Let me go! What are you doing? You two don't know how to switch brains!"
His angry words rang in my ears. What do they mean? I watched the headphones fly up all by themselves. Then they slid down over Dr. Smollett's head. I suddenly felt frightened. What was happening here? Was something bad going to happen to me? I tried to figure it all out, but thinking so hard made my head hurt. I wanted to climb to the highest tree branch I could find, but I wasn't even in my own body. I was in a boy's body, trapped here, trapped! I heard a loud hum in the headphones. My head started to buzz. The buzz grew louder. The last thing I saw was the terrified look on Dr. Smollett's face. I felt a shock. I shut my eyes. I felt a gentle puff of wind inside my head. When I opened my eyes, everything had changed. Chapter 30. I saw Nicky and Tara standing by the computer keyboard.
"You can't do this!" I screamed. "You can't do this to a great scientist!"
My voice came out high and shrill. I realized I was inside Max's body. The two evil little Roland ghosts had made a successful switch. My brain was inside Max, and inside my body...
Hoo, hoo, hoo.
The chimp. Mr. Harvey's brain was now inside my body. The chimp was scratching my beard, slapping the front of my white lab coat. I knew I'd never get over this insult, putting the brain of a chimp inside the head of one of the world's most brilliant scientists. I'll wait for my chance, I thought. I'll make those two ghosts pay for what they've done. But what can I do? I'm just a boy. A brilliant scientist trapped in a boy's body. Oh, no. I gasped as I saw what those two ghost kids were doing. They pulled my body, Dr. Smollett's body, off the other stool.
They put the chimp on the stool and hooked him up with the headphones. I knew what they planned to do. The chimp had Max's brain inside him, and I, Dr. Smollett, was inside Max's body. So I knew what they planned to do, and I knew I was helpless to stop them. The loud hum in my ears again, a strong jolt of electricity, a pounding roar, and then a gentle puff of air. I opened my eyes. I glanced around. Nikki and Tara ran up to me. They pulled the headphones off and tossed them to the floor. They helped me off the stool, onto the floor.
"Max, Max, are you back to normal?" Tara cried.
"Did it work?" Nikki demanded, tugging my arm eagerly.
"Did our brain transfer work, Max? Are you Max again? The right brain and the right body?"
"Hoo, hoo, hoo,"
I said. Chapter 31 I laughed. "I'm only kidding," I cried. "I'm back. I have my brain back again. I'm so happy, I wish I could kiss it." I hugged them both. "Good work, guys. You saved me. This time you really saved me."
"Let's get out of here," Tara said. "This place gives me the creeps."
I turned back. "But what about them?" I watched Dr. Smollett and Mr. Harvey. Their brains were switched. Dr. Smollett was pounding his chest, going, "Chee, chee, chee." Mr. Harvey was pacing back and forth angrily, his hands clasped behind his back. "We're safe now," Nikki said. "Smollett's brain is tucked nicely inside the chimp. He can't do any evil in there."
"But what if they switch brains again?" I asked.
"No way," Tara said. She took the chimp by the hand. "We're taking Mr. Harvey to the zoo. They'll find him very interesting, since he's so smart."
Nikki laughed. "The smartest chimp in history. Maybe he'll be famous."
"The zoo will never let him go," Tara said. "Dr. Smollett will never get his brain back."
"Hoo, hoo,"
Dr. Smollett called. We ran down the long hall, dragging the chimp with us. Out on the street, the night air felt fresh and cold. I hugged Nikki and Tara again. Yes, my performance for Ballantine was ruined, but I was a lucky dude, lucky to have such amazing friends. I watched Nikki and Tara head off with Mr. Harvey, the brilliant chimpanzee. I hoped he enjoyed his new home. Then I took the Miller Street bus back to my house. Mom was in the kitchen, grinding stuff in the food processor.
"Max, where have you been?"
She had to shout over the deafening roar of the machine.
"I was kidnapped by a crazed ghost scientist. I traded brains with a chimpanzee," I told her. "Then we traded back."
"That's nice," she shouted. "Now go upstairs and do your homework."
"No problem," I said.
The next Saturday, Mom surprised me with two tickets. Two tickets to see Ballantine the Nearly Amazing in an all-star performance at the City Center. Can you imagine how excited I felt? I'd never seen the great magician do his act live, and our seats were in the second row. Before the curtain, I could barely sit still. Finally, the lights went dim. The huge auditorium grew silent. A white spotlight moved across the deep purple curtain, and a voice boomed over the loudspeaker.
"Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present the world-famous magician, Ballantine the Nearly Amazing. Tonight he will be performing the new comedy magic act he calls Monkey Magic. Let's hear it for Ballantine!"
The crowd cheered. The purple curtain rose slowly. I saw a carnival set, a table loaded with magic equipment. And out came Ballantine in his glittery cape and turban, wobbling like a chimp. He turned to the audience and called out,
"Hoo, hoo, hoo!"
The audience roared. They thought it was a riot. Ballantine, acting like a monkey. He climbed onto the table and peeled a banana. He made the banana disappear back into the peel.
"Hoo, hoo!"
he called. The audience roared and cheered. I sat back in my seat, my mouth hanging open. Mom turned to me.
"Max, you're not enjoying it?"
she whispered.
"What's wrong?"
He stole my act!" I cried.
To be continued. About the author. Robert Lawrence Stein's scary stories have made him one of the best-selling children's authors in history. "Kids like to be scared," he says, and he has proved it by selling more than 300 million books. R.L. teamed up with Parachute Press to create Fear Street, the first and number one best-selling young adult horror series. He then went on to launch Goosebumps, the creepy best-selling series that gave kids chills all over the world and made him the number one children's author of all time, the Guinness Book of Records. R.L. Stine lives in Manhattan with his wife, Jane, their son, Matthew, and their dog, Nadine. He says he has never seen a ghost, but he's still looking. This concludes Freaks and Shrieks, Mostly Ghostly No. 7 by R.L. Stine. Narrated by Derek Sparks. Technicians, Julie Hooker, Margaret Williams, and Jane Segan. Completed June 2006.